Miss Pac-Man, right? Three-hour time difference, so it's all right. Very good. The time is now 10:32 on August 4th, 2023, and I call the meeting of the Arizona Board of Psychologist Examiners to order. This meeting is video hosted using Zoom. The public and parties on this agenda have properly been noticed of this fact and have been supplied with meeting access instructions. Ms. Poe, would you please call the roll?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Davey?
Present.
Mr. Dinar?
Good morning, I'm present.
Dr. Caterino?
Present.
Dr. Medina?
Present.
Dr. Malott? Dr. Stenhoff?
Here.
Dr. Stewart?
Present.
Mr. Wynn? We have a quorum.
Thank you so much, Ms. Bone. We'll begin with some remarks and announcements. Please note that any times stated on the agenda are approximate. The board makes every effort to begin proceedings at the scheduled time. The board may suspend the discussion of one agenda item, proceed to a timed item, and then return to the former agenda item at a later time. The board may also reorder non-timed items. Board members, thank you very much. I just remind you to use the raise your hand feature so that I can appropriately kind of move us through any questions, comments, or concerns. With regard to the board survey, the board encourages everyone in attendance today to provide feedback by completing the board assessment form. You'll find a link on the meeting agenda that is posted on the board website. I'd like to also just go ahead and recognize all the board members that are here today, as well as those that are not with us today. Each board member spends countless hours preparing for each of our meetings. This one is no different. We have multiple things on the agenda today that require hours of reading and analysis, and ultimately be able to move us through our deliberations. I just want to thank all the board members for their time. Also, to be able to make sure that we're prepared for these sorts of things, we have just an outstanding board staff that keeps us essentially abreast of all information as it's coming through, keeps that information organized, provides that to us in an effective and efficient manner. We also have our attorney, Gene Galvin. We also have another attorney that is joining us as well, perhaps even a third attorney from the Attorney General's office. But we have Diana and both Gene, and we thank you both for your abilities to provide us with sound legal advice as we move through our agenda items. Attendance at this board meeting is eligible for continuing education credit if it is at least 4 hours long. Should its duration be 4 hours or more, make note of the code words provided throughout this meeting to report the code words to the board staff for the purposes of earning continuing ed credit. Look for the link on the board's meeting page for this particular meeting. It is possible that today's meeting will not be 4 hours in duration. We thank you in advance for your understanding. Transitioning now to some additional thanks and some recognitions. I want to bring to the board's attention today that this will be Dr. Diana Davis Wilson's final board meeting as a board member with us. And would just like to allow board members or staff to express or wish Diana any well wishes as she goes on her next adventure at this time. And if no one wants to go out, go ahead. I will kick it off. Mr. Dinar, go ahead, sir.
Dr. Davey, thank you. I prefer you go ahead because you're the chair of the meeting, but I'm happy to say that I've learned quite a lot from Dr. Wilson, and she has been an outstanding member of the board. I wish her all the best and for the future, but I also hope that she remains involved in some of the work that the board does, maybe with the BCBA meeting, committee meetings, or just generally educating us more about the behavior analyst profession. So thank you, Dr. Davis Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Diner. Dr. Stenhoff jumping right up there. Dr. Stenhoff.
If I may, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
So, Dr. Davis Wilson, I really appreciate the work you've done. You know, we've worked together for several years on the committee, and all the work that you've done, you know, to establish licensure and regulation in the state for behavior analysts has been a huge learning experience. You know, I've been able to have the opportunity to work with you both professionally and in regulation, and I'm glad that I, in some capacities, get to continue working with you and continue learning from you. And I hope you enjoy what may be limited extra time that I'm sure you will find other things to fill that time beyond what you may even be putting in right now. So best of luck with that. But I'm also very glad that we get to continue working together in some capacity. So thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Stenhoff. Dr. Stewart.
Thank you, Chair. Diana, it's been great. It's unfortunate for us that you're leaving the board. However, I'm sure that you will continue in a growing profession like behavior analysis to represent all the interests involved. And good luck in your next chapter.
Thank you, Dr. Stewart. Dr. Catarino.
Yeah, I just want to say that that Diana has really welcomed me to the board, helped me very much to understand the proceedings. I really enjoyed working with her, and she's a credit to her profession.
Thank you, Dr. Catarino. And I made some public comments the other day at the committee level, but I will echo those comments again that for those that have been on the board as long as, well, I guess myself, those that have been around as long as Jean, I will not out her. But, you know, Dr. Davis Wilson and I began this journey when we were mere participants in front of this board. And we were honored enough to have several wonderful psychologists that mentored us on the activities of the board, the importance of the board, and how to, you know, ultimately interact as individuals that were chosen to serve as the behavior analyst representation for on this board and for the state. Dr. Davis Wilson has really set the path in front of us. Without her efforts early on to be able to clearly articulate what it meant to be a behavior analyst, what the scope of practice was, how it was different than psychology, how it would be a service to the citizens of the state of Arizona, particularly children affected by developmental disabilities, including autism. It's unclear whether we would be here today. She was tireless in her efforts to ensure that behavior analysis was recognized by this board. She then stepped forward and served on the committee when it was formed and stepped forward to serve on this committee and has held the chairpersonship, for, I believe she held it for 2 years and really continued to lead this board of psychologists and behavior analysts and the public forward. And for that, we are in your debt. And I thank you, Dr. Davis Wilson. Yes, Ms. Packenham.
Thank you for indulging me, Mr. Chair. I just want to say on behalf of the staff how invaluable Dr. Davis Wilson's information, support, and guidance has been, not only as chair, in any instance where, you know, we needed the chair to, you know, give us some direction and guidance. She was so prompt to respond and, you know, very thoughtful and very respectful of, you know, everything that we need to do as staff to execute the work of this board to, you know, carry out your governance directives. But I'm also so thankful for the time spent to really orient ourselves to the profession and, you know, the training and education requirements that we wouldn't be able to serve you effectively had she not been, you know, providing us with the great orientation that she did so patiently and sometimes repetitively. So thank you.
Yes, patience is there. Dr. Davis Wilson, I see that you have your hand up, and we will indulge you as well for a few moments.
Thank you, Dr. Davey, and thank you, everybody on the board, for your kind words. This has been, I said it to the committee as well, this has been probably one of the biggest learning opportunities for me for both my personal growth and my professional growth. And I have discovered a love of regulation, which is not what I expected to get out of this. But I have discovered a love of doing this work. And so many ask, if you love it, why are you going elsewhere? And I think, you know, part of supporting the continued mission to protect the public, I think many of my colleagues and other behavior analysts need additional support and guidance and education. And I think that my time could be well spent there in giving back to the community in a way that then prepares them for what's ahead in regulation. I don't intend to go far. I am going to be in a holdover position on the committee. So I'll be at the committee meetings for the unforeseeable future whenever that changes. I enjoy these meetings. I've been to just about every one of them since 2009. So I'm sure I will be around. I won't go far. I did get a beautiful plaque that board staff had sent over. I wanted to thank board staff I know my camera's kind of blurry, but for this opportunity and for all of the guidance they have provided to me, Ms. Galvin, I've learned so very much, about, just the state and the system and everything from you. So I appreciate your guidance. Mr. Chair, I know I've said this before. I've been very fortunate for many years to have the opportunity to work alongside Dr. Stenhoff and yourself. And I wouldn't be the professional I am today if it wasn't for those opportunities. So I look forward to continuing this work in a little bit of a different capacity, and letting kind of my moral compass and values guide me to some work that I think needs to be done, that wouldn't be able to be done in this continued position. So thank you all so very much.
Thank you, Dr. Davis Wilson. And I think it's fair to say that, you know, as others have echoed, that we all have learned from you, and whether it's with regard to behavior analysis or around regulation or just an understanding how to operate on the board or as the leader of the board. You were a great example, and I'm looking forward to you stepping out of this role and doing some work in the community, because I agree that there is much work to be done with our young profession. And I think that you are uniquely qualified to be able to tackle those issues. So look forward to seeing you be successful in that endeavor. All right. Now that we're past the teary moment of the meeting, I was trying to keep myself together, Dr. Davis Wilson. It's been a decade. We have the unique honor of We have the unique honor of welcoming a new member to the board. As Dr. Davis Wilson steps down, Dr. Donald Stenhoff will be joining us as the newest behavior analyst to sit on this board. He will be number three to have filled this position. So he's got some gigantic shoes to fill in terms of Dr. Davis Wilson's effort. And so we welcome you, Dr. Stenhoff. It's a pleasure to have you on the board. It's a pleasure to have such great continuity from Dr. Davis Wilson to you and not have an opening. So I applaud our agency as well as the governor's office and the legislature in making that happen. And I believe that was a step in the right direction. And I'm glad that you were appointed. I will allow, if anybody else would like to give a welcoming statement, that's fine, to Dr. Stenhoff, or if Dr. Stenhoff, if you'd like to take a moment to introduce yourself, that would be acceptable as well.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, thank you. I'm looking forward to it. And you used the word gigantic. I think that might be an understatement, Dr. Davey, of shoes to fill. So I'm looking forward to working with all of you. I've heard many of your names over the years, and for what you've done with regulation, not only for the psychologists, but also for the behavior analysts of the state. I'm looking forward to spending the time with you and getting to know all of you and also learning more about this process. So thank you for having me here.
And for those that do not know on the board, Dr. Stenhoff has served on the committee for behavior analysts since its inception. He has also served in the capacity of the chair of that committee for several terms. So he comes with a significant amount of background and understanding how the committee works and how the recommendations from the committee move to the board. And now we'll see that through its completion. So welcome, Dr. Stenhoff.
Welcome.
All right. I think that we have gotten through our goodbyes and our hellos, and we will continue on. Call to the public right now. Those wishing to address the board do not need to request permission in advance. However, the board will limit the number of persons speaking during this time to a reasonable number of any public comment matter. In addition, each person wishing to address the board will be given 3 minutes to do so. Pursuant to ARS 38431.02H, the board can only take action on matters listed on the agenda. The board members may not discuss the matter with each other or with the members of the public addressing the board. The only option available is to instruct staff to place the topic on a future agenda, if applicable. If you do wish to speak, please unmute your line, state your name, and I'll be happy to call on you. All right. Hearing none, then we will continue to Ms. Galvin with the council update.
Good morning, Mr. President, members of the board. I have no update at this time. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Then we will continue to roll into item number 6, consent agenda, discussion, consideration, and possible action. Agenda item 6, for the record, are there any recusals from items on the consent agenda? All right, hearing none. That's great. Any board member wish to request or may request to remove an item from the consent agenda for independent discussion or action? Are there any such requests from the board members? All right. If there are no such requests to remove any items, is there a motion to approve the items on the consent agenda?
So moved.
Thank you, Mr. Diner. Yep.
Second.
Thank you, Dr. Catarino. Any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstaining? All right. Motion unanimously carries. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to recommend, given that it isn't quite 11 o'clock, if Dr. Catarino is available or ready to present the application at number 16, and then it's your discretion, we could then address 15, acknowledging that it may go a little bit past the timed item at 11, which is acceptable.
All right, Dr. Catarino, are you ready to roll with number 16?
Let me just open that up. I didn't expect it right now.
Yeah, fair warning today with the with kind of the late start. You know, we will be moving around to make things happen in an efficient and effective manner. I know for you, you know, just we'll make sure we get going on that.
Okay. Okay, just one moment. Okay.
All right.
If you're so there, this is.
If you are, you're there. You're ready to go.
I'm here. I'm just opening the file. Can you hear me? Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So number 16, I believe, is Dr. Marie Christine Rutter, and she is right. I had this someplace. Just a moment. Okay, so she had been licensed previously in Georgia, is currently licensed in Oregon, and she is a graduate of ASU's counseling psychology with a PhD from that program. She is looking to become licensed under universal recognition. I did check the Oregon records, state records, and her license is active. I didn't see any issues with her application and would suggest that we approve it.
Thank you very much for that summary. Any questions from the board for Dr. Catarino? All right. If Rita Goodworth with us today? I don't believe I, if I don't see her staff, do you see her on the, I don't see her there. No? Okay. Then I guess we will not have any statements for her. If there are no further questions or discussions, then do we have a motion?
I'll make a motion that we approve the application of Dr. Goodworth for under universal recognition.
Thank you very much. And Dr. Stewart, is that a second?
Yes, sir.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Stewart. Any further discussion on this application? Very well. Hearing none, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstaining? Very good. Motion unanimously carries. Thank you, Dr. Catarino. Heidi, you were thinking we want to go backwards to 15?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
All right. 15, discussion, consideration, possible action regarding license reinstatement request by Carlos Jones, PhD, and whether or not to open a complaint for unlicensed practice. Ms. Poe, will you please provide a summary of this matter for the board?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. On July 14th, the board office received Dr. Jones' renewal application in which he was requesting license reinstatement. His license expired on May 31st of this year, and it was in good standing at the time. He did disclose that he had practiced during a short time during the period in which his license was expired, and that is why this item has been placed on today's agenda. He did meet all other requirements, including continuing education to reinstate his license. But since he did indicate to having practiced while the license was expired, board members need to approve the reinstatement application and decide if opening a complaint is indicated. Dr. Jones is present in the meeting today, so he may want to make a brief statement or be available for board member questions. And that concludes my summary of the matter.
Thank you so much, Ms. Poe. I appreciate that summary and appreciate you bringing this to the board's attention. And yes, I think at this time, do any board members have questions for Ms. Poe? And if not, then we would be more than happy to hear from Dr. Jones. All right. Hearing no questions for Ms. Poe at this time. Dr. Jones, I see you are there. If you will unmute yourself, and if you'd like to make a brief statement, I'd greatly appreciate it.
So, good morning to the members of the board. I believe all the information that I would want to present is in the letter that I have. It's dated July 13th. This was an error, and the error was detected by me. It was actually detected by me in the matter of making sure that my license was in line in order to undertake some work with a litigant in a case here who's in New York. So I put steps in process to be able to practice with supervision, hoping that something could be done in the interim. But my continuing education, as I indicated, had been completed. And this was an error on my part, which I take responsibility for. I think that's really all I need to present. I'd be more than glad to take any questions. And I did in my letter to the board request, and I don't know if this is appropriate or not, but being that my continuing education had been completed and I was in good standing, if it were an option for my license renewal to be retroactive to the date of expiration.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Dr. Jones. Appreciate it. To your last question about the retroactiveness, I do not believe that, and I can defer to Ms. Galvin or board staff, we have no mechanism to honor that sort of request. Like, on the date of expiration is the date of expiration. So I don't believe there's a need to go back, but I'm happy to allow board staff to articulate that, and then we can move forward to the question of unlicensed practice.
Mr. Chair, I can respond, but I would appreciate affirmation or correction from Ms. Galvin either way, but we are not aware of any statutory authority to do what is being described. So we're quite familiar with the statute and the rule that prescribe the requirements for renewal and reinstatement, and you know, retroactivity doesn't seem to be present in either source.
That's correct, Ms. Peckman.
Dr. Jones, that's the discussion on that. And then I just have a couple of questions for you. I understand that when you did your reinstatement piece, it was about the mid of July, I believe July 13th, your license expired on 5/31 of 2023. So approximately about a month and a half of unlicensed practice. You know, during that time, what were your activities? Were you supervised by other psychologists within your group? Can you kind of give us a little bit of a background to those questions?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'm going to actually go directly to my letter because I logged what I had done. I had conducted 10 therapy sessions, nine sessions as a court-appointed therapeutic interventionist, five interviews for court-ordered evaluations, five therapy sessions in court-ordered matters, three status conferences, two interviews for sexually violent persons evaluations, two interviews for attorney-requested evaluations, a home observation for a family court evaluation, preparation of a treatment summary, and a court appearance in an SVP case, a court appearance in a SVP case.
Very good. No, I appreciate it. Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, yes. The information that Dr. Jones provided is in your materials. It's on page 10 of the materials as well. He did provide that in his response.
Yes, he did. And I thank you very much. And I actually wanted to commend you, Dr. Jones, for laying that out for the board. I think that's also very helpful. I also want to draw attention for the board members to look at your efforts around making arrangements for supervision from your colleagues, three very well-known PsyDs in the field. And I thought that that was a good effort on your part. Do other members of the board have questions for Mr. Jones or for Dr. Jones? Yes, Dr. Stewart.
I believe Dr. Catarino raised her hand first.
Oh, sorry, Dr. Catarino.
I was just wondering how we would handle the financial aspects of this, because money would have been received for the work that he did during that period while he was unlicensed. And what is, in the past, how has that been handled? Does the applicant have to pay back those funds, or what has been a precedent for that?
Are you asking for Ms. Galvin to respond?
Yes, I think Ms. Heidi or Jean, yes, either one who would know.
This is Jean. Typically, the licensee has come to the board and in acknowledging their error and steps that they have taken to remediate the situation. They have acknowledged that they have contacted the payors and arranged for the licensee to reimburse the payors. I'm not sure how it works with the court-appointed work that it appears that Dr. Jones engaged in while he was unlicensed.
Just maybe to augment slightly Ms. Galvin's answer, which I concur entirely with, I don't know that the board has the authority to order restitution. So that is something I think to be mindful of.
Yep, absolutely. I appreciate that. And I think that in this case, it's you know, as we've seen in other cases where we've seen a lapse of license, it's to at least inform the parties that were essentially the clients in this case. In this case, it appears to be the state for Mr. Jones that this lapse of license had occurred so that they could take that under consideration. I believe that that is what we have kind of done in the past.
The reason why I asked is I recall some cases and where the psychologist has paid back the money that they earned. And that's why I didn't know if that was required or they did that as an effort of goodwill on their part or how it was done.
It's usually been left up to the licensee to address.
Okay.
I believe, Dr. Stewart, you had questions?
Yeah, so that would be my question to Dr. Jones, the one that Dr. Catarino asked, and that is, have you made such arrangements? If so, what are they?
I have made contact, and it's indicated in my letter with I have a contract with the State Department of Health Services preparing sexually violent person evaluations, and I made contact with the attorney from the Attorney General's office with regard to that, and with the director of the ACPTC at the state hospital with regard to that. And they are looking into what is required there. I've also, in the cases that I had to halt work on, made contact with the attorneys in those cases. My practice is predominantly forensic. Made contact with the attorneys there and let them know what the situation was. So I will be, depending upon the outcome here, making contact with them and with the litigants as well. I think part of my concern is that there was a period of time that I have work that was partially done before that and done in that period of time. And there'll be some work that is done partially during that period of time and then going forward. So that's something that I will need to address, but nothing has taken place yet because I haven't had any contact with any of the actual subjects, just the attorneys, the ACPCT director, and the attorney from the AG's office.
A follow-up question, if I may, for Dr. Jones. I see also the court testimony listed. Would there be a letter written to the court indicating that you were without license approval during the time of the testimony, or what's proposed there?
That case is actually scheduled to continue. The case was cut off on that date and was scheduled to complete on another date. And I did discuss that with Mr. Bacon from the State Attorney General's office. He actually asked if I would be comfortable completing my testimony during that period of time. And part of what he cited is that the sexually violent person statutes require that an individual be a competent professional, but not a licensed person, either as a psychologist or a master's level therapist. What he presented to me in our discussion is that was intentionally so that individuals could testify that we're on staff there. So he didn't see any problem with my going forward and completing testimony during this period prior to this being addressed by the board. But I did myself present to him that I would be more comfortable waiting.
And you will present that information to the jurisdiction, to the judge involved in the case, and let the judge decide?
Yes, that's been discussed with Mr. Bacon, and that will be a disclosure, as I am the expert for the state in that matter.
Excellent. Thank you.
You're welcome. If I may add just one more thing. During this period of time, I'm involved in two peer supervision groups. One of them is with a group of psychologists and attorneys in the family law arena. And another one is with a group of psychologists who all perform evaluations in psychosexual matters, have performed evaluations in SVP matters and in criminal matters and in family court. So I have been regularly working with and receiving supervision from peers during this period of time.
Thank you for that clarification. Dr. Catarino.
Yes, I was wondering, Dr. Jones, when you were first sworn in the court matter, did you have to give your credentials? And at that time, was your license active? In other words, did you state, I am a psychologist in the state of Arizona? Usually, I think they ask name and your credentials.
Yes, there was a voir dire process in this matter, and I did present my resume as my vita as being correct. I believe the exact question would have been what my current employment is, and I would have presented that I am a psychologist.
Okay. And that was during the period that your license was inactive or before yes. you had renewed. Okay.
Yes.
And then the other question, you mentioned evaluations. I don't know how you bill, but you can bill by the hour. And so the hours that you were, what was conducted while your license was current would be certain hours. And then hours where you were, the license was not current, maybe they wouldn't be billed. You know, you don't have to bill as the full evaluation. You can bill by the hour. So. Okay.
Understood. Thank you.
All right. Any further questions for Dr. Jones? Very good. Then let's go ahead and move into deliberations around this matter. Dr. Catarino, do you have a summary? And then we'll move into any sort of motion or discussion at that point.
Me? Yes. Oh, this wasn't my case. But what do you mean, summary?
Sorry. I apologize. This really wasn't anybody's case. Ms. Poe gave
us that. So, no, what I would say is I am concerned about the, you know, maybe, I mean, accidental misrepresentation on in a court about his credentials. I am concerned about that. I'm concerned about the financial aspects, you know, to our state, which is sometimes does not have enough money. And I'm very pleased that he's made the hours up and that he, during these 6 weeks, was able to complete the continuing education assessment. I do know that I just did my renewal and I received it, the requests about a month before. So I had time to get on track and do it. So I don't know what was the issue, why it was not done before.
He explained, excuse me, Dr. Gunner, yeah. He explained in the letter that the email was entered incorrectly and so then not received the
reminder. Oh, yes. That's right. Thank you. Yes. But and that's the only way. But I think we are now aware that it's during the month of our birth. Most people are aware of that now, I think. But you're right.
Yes, and Mr. Chairman and members of the board, yes, there was an error in Dr. Jones' email address, and that is why he did not get the email reminders. That does not excuse a licensee not renewing on time. But board staff did note in communication with him and correct the error. So moving forward, he will receive those communications.
My deliberation around this is really for my psychologist colleagues. You know, we have it for behavior analysts that, you know, if they're under supervision by other behavior analysts during this time, that really that fits the bill for them to be able to practice under that person, you know, so long as they're not billing inappropriately. And we've had that discussion at the committee level and the board level here. So Dr. Jones has pointed out that he was engaged in activities with colleagues. You know, I think that when I look through his letter, you know, he's been very forthcoming about what actions he's taken. Yes, concerning that, you know, not attending to the expiration date. But I'm very much interested in not to put you on the spot, Dr. Stewart, but kind of your thoughts around the group that he was engaged with in terms of peer-to-peer feedback.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I also belong to some of those groups, not the one that Dr. Jones mentioned, but they're invaluable bringing up cases and supervision. I think even though there's not a specific person identified as providing supervision during that time, Dr. Jones does cite three prominent psychologists to receive supervision during this interim going forward until the license is reinstated. And certainly that meets my needs to see done. The financial thing, I agree with Dr. Catarino, that should be a priority. The only real concern I had was testifying or presenting oneself as a psychologist in court. And certainly that the ramifications is what impact does that have for a misguided outcome of on the court, the decision of the court in specific situations, especially sexually violent offenders. But I think Dr. Jones addressed that he has been in contact with the Attorney General's office, and he intends to continue to be in contact with the Court of Jurisdiction. And that certainly is sufficient for me. Thank you.
And so, Mr. Dino, please.
Thank you, Dr. Davey. I agree with what Dr. Stewart said and what Dr. Catarino said. I'll just add in terms of discussion, you know, there's two issues, the reinstatement and then the unlicensed practice for 1 month and 11 days. And as to the reinstatement, I think we should grant the reinstatement of the license. And as to the unlicensed practice for 1 month, 11 days, I think Dr. Jones has taken good faith efforts to correct the error. At most, what I'm thinking of is perhaps a letter of concern saying, yeah, the board is concerned with this, but, you know, we aren't imposing any disciplinary sanctions against Dr. Jones. And maybe that letter will help Dr. Jones then contact everybody else, you know, the AG's office, the courts in which he testified, all of the other attorneys and other therapy sessions that he conducted to, you know, kind of address some of the concerns that Dr. Catarino and Dr. Stewart mentioned in terms of possibly reaching some kind of arrangement to give back the fees collected during that time, or, you know, however that letter may be used. I think that would help Dr. Jones sort of put this behind him and move on.
And
Mr. Chair.
And Mr. Diner, you're speaking of a non-disciplinary letter of concern, correct?
That's correct.
Yes, I think that's what you said. Thank you. Dr. Catarino.
The question I have, when you mentioned supervision and the behavior analyst, I'm not sure if the supervisors he mentions are really more like peer consultation, or they would be supervisors where in behavior analysts where they might be billing under the supervisor's credentials. I don't know.
Slightly different there, Dr. Catarino. It's more of the supervision of, like, think of it in terms of case consultation, staffing matters around the case.
Okay, so that would be similar then.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, would it be appropriate for me to provide some additional information in response to the questions that have come in?
Sure, Dr. Jones.
Okay, just to clarify, there are two peer supervision and consultation groups that I have been involved with during that period of time. And for the SVP case, the evaluation had actually been completed and submitted prior to the expiration of my license. So my testimony was based upon information that was gathered and an opinion that was presented prior to May 31st.
Thank you for that.
Thank you.
Ms. Galvin, just a question. You know, we've had several license lapses the last couple of sessions. Has it been, you know, it's been standard practice of a non-disciplinary letter of concern, correct?
I would want staff to chime in on that. Heidi may have a better recollection than I do.
Ms. Galvin and Mr. Chairman and members of the board, in the past, no, we have not issued a non-disciplinary letter of concern.
as long as, you know, the situation is such where they've, you know, reinstated the, or requested the license reinstatement, you know, within a fairly timely manner after the license, you know, had expired. We have not previously issued a letter of concern. In the past, the board has approved the license reinstatement and opted to take no action regarding opening a complaint, at least pertaining to psychologists, unless there was something egregious going on, which in my history with 8+ years with the board, we haven't had to do anything more than that.
Very good. Thank you very much. I think at this time, let's go ahead and split this discussion into two. Let's perhaps take the reinstatement first, and then from there we can move forward. Oh, yes, Dr. Stewart.
I'm willing to make that motion if you wish.
If you can combine both the reinstatement and the issue of practicing without a license, I am all ready to hear it.
I move that we reinstate Dr. Jones's license to practice as a psychologist. The second part of my motion is that we take no action regarding the unlicensed practice for the 1 month and 11 days that he was without a license.
Very good.
Second.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Dinar. And do we have any further discussion?
Mr. Chair, just as a matter of discussion, my initial comment was I had prefaced it by saying at most, I'm thinking of a letter of concern. So I agree with Dr. Stewart's assessment, and based on the advice we received from board staff as to what actions we have taken in the past, I'm more than okay with the motion that's on the table.
Very good. Thank you for that clarification, Mr. Dinar. Appreciate it. Any further discussion? Hearing none. We don't need a roll call, correct, Ms. Galvin? We can do this. Thank you very much. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstaining? A motion unanimously carries. Thank you very much, Dr. Jones, for appearing today. Thank you very much for your very clear and concise letter with regards to the activities. And thank you for the work you do in the area that you are an expert. We need more individuals like you helping those that are in particular situations, particularly youth that are in those difficult cases. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the board and to the board staff as well.
All right.
You will receive communication from me later today, but your license will be reinstated before the end of the
day. Understood. Thank you.
Thank you.
Before we move on, I would like to give the first CE code word. If anybody
yes, Ms. Pope.
For continuing education, the first CE code word is heat wave. And please wait until the end of the meeting to submit all of your code words. Thank you.
Very good. All right, moving on. I believe we can now move to time item for 11 o'clock. Ms. Beckman, thank you. We're going to move to item number 7, discussion, consideration, possible action relating to Neil Olshan, PhD, compliance with the board's interim order for a fitness duty evaluation for case 2230. At this time, the board options include, but are not limited to, looking at these some allegations for 2030 and moving that to a formal hearing to include a possible allegation of professional conduct for failure to comply with the board order. The board may also vote to go into executive session on any item on this agenda pursuant of ARS 38431.03A2 to review confidential records, including the receipt, discussion of information or testimony that is confidential by state law and or ARS 38431.03A3, or to receive confidential legal advice from the board's attorney. The time is now 11:21, and we will address agenda item number 7. Ms. Pakanon, will you please provide a brief update relative to this matter to the board?
Yes, Mr. Chair. So this matter relates to a board order for to submit to a fitness for duty evaluation ordered of Dr. Neil Olshan. Given that the board's order was issued on May 9th, and the appointment for the scheduling of the evaluation, we understand to have occurred on July 24th with an appointment date on August 28th. This compelled board staff to bring this matter to the board for purposes of reviewing and determining what, if any, action to take concerning the facts and the circumstances that I will summarize at a high level. We did provide in the board order and in point of fact in advance of the board order a list of the board approved evaluators, a list that we have long maintained and have shared with licensees in similar instances. And what we came to understand through copious communications that were exchanged between Dr. Olshan's attorney, Mr. Andrew Brevington, and staff, was that Dr. Olshan was identifying some of the evaluators were no longer available to perform that service, either in some instances just simply concluded offering the service, retired, relocated, and so forth. And so that prompted board staff to, consistent with the board order, to grant an extension of time and to allow for another other potential options to emerge. And so that process took us roughly to July 12th, at which time what was characterized to board staff is that Dr. Olshan was still unable to confirm an evaluator. That compelled me to reach out to some trusted sources, specifically the State Psychological Association, to try to cast a wider net in terms of identifying some options. That was successful, and a few other names were identified, including that of Dr. Joel Parker, a psychiatrist with whom I spoke with by phone on July 12th to affirm that he was in fact did have the experience and the capability to perform this evaluation, and he affirmed as much. And so that information was supplied to Dr. Olshan, to his attorney, on July 12th. So I asked Mr. Brevington, because this exchange of information occurred through many emails. So the request was made of Mr. Brevington to please summarize all of the efforts that Dr. Olshan made to schedule his evaluation up to and including the new evaluators that were identified on the 12th. So once I had that information, I elected to organize it, I think, in a way that would help the board sort of process it. And so the chart that you see in the memorandum on page 2, I think, outlines that information as derived from the explanation and as supported by the emails. What I find, and I think the board will observe, is that there's at least one provider, two really, that really there's no indication that they were considered by Dr. Olshan. Nevertheless, the name that I supplied, one of the names I supplied on July 12th, that of Dr. Parker, we did come to understand after prompting Mr. Brevington for a status update on July 24th that he had been scheduled, affirmed for an evaluation, and the evaluation was scheduled at Dr. Olshan's convenience to be on August 25th, so later this month. And so what I believe to be the options for the board to consider would be to memorialize the arrangement with a motion as suggested by our independent legal advisor. However, there may be some other options that the board may want to request that Ms. Didia identify for you that may include taking this matter and remanding it in the same fashion that this board has to formal hearing under the existing case of 2230. And so I will conclude my summary unless you have questions. And I know you'll have questions. I anticipate you'll have questions of Ms. Dedea. We do have Dr. Olshan and his attorney, Mr. Brevington, with us today. And I believe they will agree to address your questions as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Pacanon. Any questions? Yes, Dr. Stewart.
Thank you, Chair. Ms. Pacanon, just a point of clarification, if I may. On page 4 of Mr. Brevington's letter, it says the evaluation with Dr. Parker is scheduled for August 28th and not the 25th.
I beg your pardon. Thank you, Dr. Stewart. And we have been in contact with Dr. Parker's office just for purposes of assuring that we will be supplying the records that are germane to the evaluation. So we expect that a full transfer of records would occur as early next week to prepare Dr. Parker.
Thank you for that. Any further questions for Ms. Beckerman? For the board members, I'll note that because this case is an informal hearing status, the board is represented by an independent legal advisor, Diana. I'm going to always say it wrong. Sorry. Dedea. I'm going to get it out of there at some point. Ms. Galvin represents the state of Arizona in this case. Thank you for being with us, Ms. Dedea.
Absolutely. And please call me Diane.
That'll help me.
Thank yes. you,
Dr. Olshan, I see, yes, you are present and you're represented by counsel. Mr. Brevington, do I see him on my screen somewhere?
Yes. Hello, I am here.
Thank you. Thank you very much. My screens are split right now. There you are. Appreciate that. Thank you so much. Please introduce yourselves for the record, and you're both welcome to make your statements and or a single statement to the board at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, board members, board staff. I just want to first clarify a couple of things in the memo before Dr. Olshan makes a statement. The memo says that Dr. Olshan initially said that Dr. Leonard did not return his calls, but then changed it to say she hadn't been changed it later to say Memo says that Dr. Olshan stated that Dr. Leonard didn't return his calls, but that isn't accurate. In my May 26th communication, I said that they'd been playing phone tag and that Dr. Leonard had not returned Dr. Olshan's latest call as of that date. That was an accurate statement. As to Dr. Parker, Dr. Olshan did call his office as soon as he realized his wife had not made that initial call. And there was a statement that we had said prior to that, that Dr. Olshan was talking with Dr. Parker. I don't believe I see that anywhere in the communications. Now, obviously, we're all concerned about this length of time that it took to set up the evaluation, but I do want to know that some delay was caused between June 1st and June 26th while we were waiting for board staff to identify additional evaluator options that they had agreed to do, and also to vet a clinical psychologist that I had proposed. I'd also like to know that Dr. Olshan set up his appointment within 2 weeks of being given new names from board staff on July the 12th. During that two-week period, he also had to prepare for the July 19th CSC meeting and handle other professional obligations. Dr. Olshan has no incentive to delay this evaluation. He has every incentive to complete it, as he knows he needs to do that to continue practicing. Now, there may be some questions over his preferences of an evaluator after he did some research. I will submit that by giving 6 evaluators to choose from, the process is designed to give the licensee discretion in choosing their evaluator. Here, the process was undercut by the unavailability of 4 of the first 6 evaluators. Again, more time was lost as board staff agreed to search for evaluators. As I noticed in my last communication, this process would be further and severely undercut if Dr. Olshan was forced to choose an evaluator only because all the others were not available. I submit that under the facts and circumstances, good cause does exist to grant another extension so that Dr. Olshan may sit for his evaluation on August the 28th. I will now turn it over to Dr. Olshan to make a statement. Thank you.
Dr. Olshan, thank you for being here. You can begin your statement now.
Dr. Olson, please unmute yourself.
Neil, there is a bottom in the bottom left corner of your screen. There is a microphone with a line.
Okay, am I unmuted now?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you, Dr. Olson.
Can you hear me now?
We can. Thank you, Dr. Olson. Please begin.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, sir.
Okay. You know, I feel badly about a lot of this, and I think a number of it has been a miscommunication. When I looked at the evaluators, obviously this is something that is so important. It could not only affect my ability to practice psychology, it could affect my ability as a private pilot, a lot of different areas. It was my choice that since I was under the understanding that I could pick somebody, I would like to have somebody who was aware of my history, somebody who may have interacted with me and knew a little bit about me. And so I had attempted to get some people. I knew Dr. Blackwood, and I know there's a question as to why I didn't want to go there. I do need to tell the board that my health is better than it's been in 20 years, but I can't drive. Due to a back injury, I have nerve damage in my leg. My son, who is an attorney, said, "Dad, yes, you can drive, but if you get in an accident, they're going to come after you." So I don't drive. My wife drives me everywhere. Going up to Dr. Blackwood would require staying overnight. My wife is, I can't tell you her age, but she's at an age where we both don't drive a lot at night. So we'd have to stay overnight. So I'd sort of kept him in the background. And the other thing I need to say is that for a period of 5 days, I was in Utah for my daughter's wedding. And so when I finally got a chance to talk to Dr. Blackwood, we had a very good discussion, and he told me that he did not feel that he could give me that type of evaluation because he felt that his knowing me could possibly interfere. He told me if your attorney wants an affidavit, I'd be more than happy to provide that. So Dr. Blackwood was out, but also I had been given the name of Dr. Parker. I've known him for 13 years doing legals for Maricopa County and Rule 11s. And my wife is my office manager. And so what I did was I wrote her a note saying, please call Dr. Parker to set up the evaluation. I put it on her desk in our house. Our home office is back to back. And I didn't hear anything. I didn't think anything about it. And then when I received a notice from my attorney that Dr. Blackwood had not been called, I went over to my wife's desk, thumbed through a lot of papers, and there was my note at the bottom. She never called. I immediately got on the phone, called Dr. Blackwood's office. I asked to speak to him and his assistant. Oh, I'm sorry, Dr. Parker. And Dr. Parker's assistant said that I could not speak with him and that he had talked to the board. I said, fine, I need to set up this evaluation. Oh, she also said that he had informed the board that he would be comfortable giving me the evaluation. I said, well, let's set up the appointment. It was not at my convenience, as it was just stated. The first date she gave me was a date that I'm on contract with at Mesa Court System. I have a year contract, and the dates are specified a year in advance. She informed me that he would only do this. I had the impression he'd only do this at 8 o'clock in the morning. So that first date was out that she suggested. I said, what other dates would he be available? She said, I believe August 16th. I'll have to check my notes. That's a date that I'm going to be at Core Civic Jail for evaluations, doing evaluations. And then she said, well, how about the 28th? I said, 28th looks great with me. 28th at 8 o'clock, I'll be there. And then I had notified my attorney. So that's how that came about. It wasn't, yes, it was at my convenience, but I was getting those dates from Dr. Parker's person. I didn't bring up the 16th or the 28th. She brought up the 28th. And I'm more than happy to do the evaluation. I realize how important it is for the board and for myself, since I'm hoping to practice maybe a year and a half at the most, 2 or 2 years at the most before I retire. So that's how that the 28th came about. And I apologize to the board sincerely, but so much was at stake at this, and I was hoping to get somebody who was at least familiar with me, and I think any reasonable person would do that. And so that's how the 28th came about. I apologize for the delays, and but nothing was meant to forestall what I know I need to do and hope to do to prove to the board that I'm fit to be a psychologist.
Thank you, Dr. Olshan, and for your attorney, thank you as well. I think at this point we will see if the board has any questions or points of clarification they need from Dr. Olshan or his counsel. Yes, Dr. Stewart.
Thank you, Chair. Dr. Olshan, thank you for being here this morning. Also appreciate your willingness to go through with this fit for duty evaluation with Dr. Parker. He certainly has a, as you've already mentioned, he has a just a stellar status in the state in terms of forensic psychiatry. So I commend you on that and your willingness to do that. And I certainly would appreciate it if you would indeed follow through with that. Thank you.
Other questions or comments for Dr. Olshan? So can I get clarification on when this appointment is actually set with the
for Dr. It is Parker? Always the 28th.
The 28th of this month.
Yes.
Yeah, and I think my comment, Dr. Olshan, is going to be this. Like, I have been on the board for a period of time of which I have interacted with you around different aspects of your practice. And Mike, and as you've said to me and to many board members over the course of time, that, you know, you're hoping to practice for, you know, I think the first time I met with you or interacted with you was like another 2 to 2.5 years. And now it's another year and a half. And my concern is around, are we just running out the clock around some of the requests that the board is making? I fully appreciate that things happen. I fully appreciate that life is complicated and things scheduling is difficult. But I do have some concern around this idea that we just are kicking the can down the road. And I'm not one to be a skeptic, but I would not want to end up here a month from now having to hear about how something else has occurred and God knows what it could be. You know, and you didn't get to go to that evaluation. And so I just want to put that in your ear, and I want to put that in your counsel's ear as well, because, you know, if counsel needs to drive you there or, you know, whatever we need to do to make sure that happens, like, it cannot be missed. This is, again, I just get this sense that we're running out the clock, and I'm very uncomfortable with that. Other board members have comments or questions? Katarina.
Yeah, I'm actually a little, I understand what he's saying. He wanted to find someone that knew him, But then I thought that maybe that goes against my thinking of having an objective evaluation. So I don't know. That's sitting a little funny with me.
So do you have a question for me? Again, we're kind of at the point.
No, I just wanted to express the confusion I have, or uneasiness.
May I say something?
Yes.
I probably phrased that wrong. What I meant is someone who knew of my history of work. I have never socially met Dr. Parker. I have never socially met Dr. Blackwood. I have no friendship with them. I have no interaction with them other than occasionally on a professional basis. So I probably misstated that. I just was hoping that somebody who may have seen a report of mine in the past or whatever, which probably benefits them, because it would be easier for them to see a decline if there is one. But I have no social and nothing with any of those people. I wasn't trying to get a friend.
When you said we've known him for 13 years, that's what I took from it. Okay.
Thank you. So just one second, please, sir. Just a reminder for members, like, this is a chance to ask questions, and then we'll move into deliberation. Mr. Remington, if you'd like to add to the response, that's fine.
Yeah, Dr. Medina. I would just like to say that I believe it is up to the evaluator to make the determination as to whether any pre-existing relationship with Dr. Olshan precluded that evaluator from conducting that. And here, I think we have to trust Dr. Parker to have done that analysis and determined that he can objectively conduct this evaluation.
Thank you. Dr. Medina, further questions for Dr. Olshan or his counsel?
Well, I actually wanted to make a motion to go into executive session. I have
to. I'll go ahead and second that. So the motion is to go to executive session to receive legal advice, and this would be from Diana. And so Dr. Medina made the motion. I second it. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Ms. Bakkenon will make magic happen.
I defer to Ms. Poe. Thank you.
I'm just waiting for Dr. Catarino. There we go. And Dr. Olshan and his counsel are available. Thank you very much. Board is returning from executive session. Appreciate the legal advice that we received in that session. It was helpful. And, you know, I think coming out of this, I want to ask one more question of Dr. Olshan, and then I probably have then a couple other things to say after his response. But Dr. Olshan, there was early on, there was an individual that you had identified as someone that would be acceptable to you to conduct the fitness for evaluation, Dr. Lazaritz. Do you recall having him on your list? He was one of the original evaluators listed on the order. And then I believe I'd like some details as to why he was not selected, because I believe that he was someone that you had identified, or we had identified early on. And do you have, can you give us some details around that, please?
Just to clarify, Mr. Chair, Dr. Lazaritz was one of the pre-approved evaluators listed in the interim order. And I believe Mr. Brevington indicated that he was not considering Dr. Lazaritz, but it wasn't clear to us. So that definitely be a question for Dr. Olshan and this council to answer now.
Yeah, just as we're looking at the timeliness of this. You're muted, Dr. Olshan.
Bottom left hand corner of the screen, Bill. Click on the microphone with a red line through it.
Okay.
There
you go. I believe in reviewing Dr. Lazaritz' credentials and such, which are good. At that point, I believe that it was my choice to choose someone, and so I moved to other people to try and get them to do the evaluation on me. I don't have those notes right with me, I believe there was something when I was looking over the individual that I just would feel comfortable with somebody else. I'd have to go back and look at my notes for that, but that didn't stop me from moving forward and trying to get hooked up with someone else. In a number of the cases, I had to wait a number of days to even get a response back. But that was, I didn't have anything against that doctor, but I was hoping to get one of the other doctors.
Thank you. I appreciate the response.
Chair, could I add to that briefly?
Please, by all means.
I would also like to point out that earlier in the communications, when it looked like Dr. Ocean had struck out of four of the six or potentially five, in my communications with board staff, I did note that it wouldn't be particularly fair to make him go and get an evaluation with the last name on the list. And subsequent to that, I was never directed by board staff to, we don't care, go to the last name of the list. So I raised the issue of Dr. Larrowitz that I didn't think it was particularly fair to make him choose the last person. And at no point was I directed to contact, or was I directed to have Dr. Ocean contact her after that. So I just wanted to give that information.
Yeah, well, and I'd be happy to push back on that information. You're provided a list of six possible evaluators. They're not rank ordered. And, you know, the fact that Dr. Olshan's taking his time to vet each one to see who is most likely going to be favorable does not sit well with me. And neither does that defense of the list. But that being said, I'm going to make a motion that we table number seven for the time being and move on to item number eight.
Second.
Dr. Medina, thank you for the second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstaining? Thank you very much. Motion carries. We'll now move on to item number eight, discussion and consideration of possible action relating to the initial case review of complaint 2344 against Neil Olshan, PhD. Board options at this point include, but are not limited to, remanding this case to formal hearing or consolidating this case with 2230 against Neil Olshan, PhD. It is, the time is now 12:12. The case was referred to the board. To the board complaint screening committee for the purposes of conducting an initial review. We will start with a summary of that case, and it'll be provided by the lead, Dr. Medina. Dr. Medina, as you will, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a summary for complaint 2344 against Dr. Neil Olshan, holder of license number 429. Dr. Olshan has been licensed in the state of Arizona since October 17, 1975. The complainant identified as SB alleges in the complaint that Dr. Olshan engaged in unprofessional conduct as he repeatedly failed to abide by his agreements to meet SB in person or by phone, repeated cancellations or no-shows by Dr. Olshan, charged SB Insurance Company for a session that did not take place. Dr. Olshan offered to assist SB in obtaining investors for a device SB created, and that Dr. Olshan pulled out a handgun and placed it on his desk during one session. SB also provided several text messages he received from Dr. Olshan upon him finding out about the complaint that expressed anger and implied that he would take some sort of action against SB, although nothing was specifically mentioned. Dr. Olshan responded to the allegations in a timely manner via his attorney, Andrew Beaverton, asserting that SB's complaint is that SB does not believe Dr. Olshan did enough to connect SB with investors for his invention. SB had shown resistance to treatment recommendations made by Dr. Olshan due to SB having had some training and background in meditation. Dr. Olshan tried the device and after seeing some utility offered to facilitate introduction between SB and investors, including his daughter and son-in-law. And when their interest to fund SB's invention failed to materialize, SB became angry and blamed Dr. Olshan. According to therapy records provided by Dr. Olshan, the last therapy session took place on November 11th, 2022.
In the response, it was also highlighted that the text provided in the complaint all happened between January 2023 and March 2023. Dr. Olshan denied pulling out a handgun in front of SP as alleged. Dr. Olshan indicated that he had brought a handgun into the office for personal protection and informed SP of the presence of the firearm, which was about 15 feet away. In his response, Dr. Olshan explained that he believed that he had facilitated an introduction to even one investor for SP device, and then SP would never have filed the complaint. Neither Dr. Olshan nor the complainant were in attendance at the Complaint Screening Committee meeting held on July 19th, 2023. Given the seriousness of the allegations, the committee then decided to forward this case for full board review. And that concludes my summary of the case.
Thank you so much for that, Dr. Medina. I appreciate it. Next, we can hear from the complainant SP if they are in attendance. I do, board staff, I don't believe they're here, correct?
Mr. Chair, he informed me that he likely would not be able to attend today, so I do not see him here.
Very good. Thank you for that. Then we will move on to Dr. Olshan, who we know you are present and we know you're represented by your counsel. We can probably skip the introductions of yourself and we can just move directly to your statements around this matter.
Yes. Thank you. Oh. Neil, let me speak first, please. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My first request would have been to table the discussion of this matter until after Dr. Olshan had conducted his fitness for duty evaluation. But as that matter has been tabled, I don't see procedurally that we could do that. I'm not here to say there are no issues in this case, but I would like to briefly touch on some of the legal infirmities and the suggested violations. Multiple relationships are not per se unethical. The plain language of APA Code 3.05 requires a licensee to refrain from entering a multiple relationship if it could be reasonably expected to impair objectivity, competence, or effectiveness. Now, this refrain from entering language means that the analysis is supposed to be performed when entering that relationship. Here, when Dr. Olshan agreed to help SP in a very limited fashion, he did not reasonably expect any issues. All he agreed to do was make some introduction to potential investors. Hindsight is always 20/20. Under 3.05b, if unforeseen factors lead to a potential harmful relationship, the licensee takes reasonable steps to cure it. Dr. Olshan did that here. The clinical record is replete with references of Dr. Olshan trying to direct SP back to therapy. When that proved not possible, he terminated the therapeutic relationship in November 2022. The facts here do not meet the legal test for an improper and unethical dual relationship. Turning to the conflict of interest, APA Code 3.06 says the licensee refrains from taking on a professional role when personal, scientific, professional, legal, financial, or other interests could reasonably be expected to impair objectivity, competence, or effectiveness. The only interest Dr. Olshan had when he agreed to help SV was an altruistic interest. He thought this device could help people and he wanted to help in a limited fashion. This other altruistic interest did not cause any conflict. Now, as to the 3.03 ethical violation, APA Code 303, this, as you noted, is based on Dr. Olshan sending SP the text after he received the complaint. Now, we explained, without making excuses, that this was a lapse of judgment and a knee-jerk reaction. I also know that the plain language of that code demonstrates it's supposed to be for harassment based on bigotry or bias. That also is not legally appropriate here. Finally, subsection 16G, the suggested violation, this penalizes engaging in or offering to engage in activities incongruent with the licensee's education, training, and experience. Dr. Olshan's limited offer to make a couple of introductions to potential investors, I do not believe, legally classifies as activities. Moreover, nothing suggests it was beyond his education, training, and experience to offer to make those introductions. Again, I request the board consider tabling this matter until they had determined whether or not Dr. Olshan could sit for the interim fitness for duty evaluation. Because I think once, as we expect, he passes that evaluation for efficiencies, we'd like to see global resolution of this matter and that first matter together. That's all I have. I'd now like to hand it over to Dr. Olshan, who's going to make a statement and take questions.
When I first saw this individual, he presented as someone who could not make friends, exhibiting somewhat of an antisocial personality disorder, was concerned about being lonely and those kinds of things. He was also complaining of not being able to sleep and being stressed and such. So I was trying to teach him some relaxation techniques, because anytime I brought up something that involved him personality, he resisted it. And so in the course of doing that, I made him 3 audio file tapes to listen to at night when he was trying to go to sleep. These were not charged for because they're not covered by Medicare. I did them on my own time. Each time I did it, he came back and said, well, I studied in India, and I studied with this Maharishi in India, and no, that's not the right way to do it. This happened over a period of about 4 visits. And so he brought up, you know, I can't get the visualization down that you're asking me to visualize a quiet scene. And I said, have you ever tried virtual reality? And he said, no. I said, well, you know, that's putting a goggle on and there's a picture in there. And virtual reality has been used for a number of years for fear of flying, for other kinds of things. And so I worked and got a picture of Mount Hood. He wanted Mount Hood, and it projected into a goggle, which he said he didn't have the money for. I bought it for him for $49 and said, you know, here, you know, if it works, it's worth the investment for you. He used it one time and said it was not, wasn't any good. He then brought into the office a small device, which was a blue pulsing light. He informed me that he had invented it and had sold it, and then sold his rights to it. But he had come out with a new one, and he thought that might be helpful. I looked at it, took it home. I thought it could be helpful for people. We talked a little bit more about it, and then I discharged him from therapy because I said, we're not getting anywhere in therapy. I said, but I really think your device could help people. And what are you doing to get it marketed? He said, well, I'm going to form a corporation and such. And I said to him, which I probably should not have done, I said, my daughter and her husband do investing. They know people who invest in things. I think this could really help other people. And I'd be more than happy to pass that on to them. He immediately came back and said, well, if you do that, you can be a member of the board. I said, I cannot participate in this in any other manner than giving you the name of somebody who's interested. He wanted the names. I said, I would much rather, I'm going over to California. I'll show it to my daughter, see what she thinks. If she's interested, you know, she can give you a call, or you can give her a call. Well, I showed it to her. She thought it was interesting, but a lot of other things were going on. A lot of other things were going on with me. And he seemed to get more and more upset when I wouldn't give him the names of people. And I said, no, you know, this isn't working out. And he wanted to come to my office. He wanted to give me newer ones. And those were a couple of times when I said, hey, I got to cancel. You can come by the office, drop it off, but I'm busy seeing people. The other thing is that the one session that was misbilled for, that was a session that he had canceled. And unfortunately, I didn't pass it on through the billing system I use, which is Helper. And I believe that we've gone ahead right after that and tried to do where we pull that billing out, which is really difficult with Medicare because it's a mess trying to do that. But that was just one session. The other thing is that I don't know whether many of you remember, but about 7 years ago, I was threatened by a referral from the Superior Court, who tried to take me out the second story window and kill himself and kill me. I happened to have, I was going shooting later in the day, happened to have a gun in the office. The Attorney General's office totally thought that I had acted appropriately. He attacked me physically. The reason for the gun in the office was that 2 weeks prior, one of the guards at Core Civic Jail in Florence had informed me that somebody I'd evaluated, that the guy had said, I'm going to get all those evaluators. So what I had done is after I heard that and I found out he had been released, I went ahead and I brought the gun. I had it sitting way in the corner of the desk, literally out of his sight. When we started talking, I realized maybe he could see it. And I said, by the way, I have a gun over here in a holster. I'm licensed to use it. I explained to him why I had it. And I said, I can put it back in my briefcase if you'd like, or I'll put it in the drawer if you'd like. It was pointed away from him. And he said, no, that's okay. And then I got a very strange message from him later that night saying, did I anger you? Or it was a bizarre message. And I got back to him and said, no. So that was that incident. And it's my firm belief that, number one, I was at fault. I was trying to help him out. I'm trying to be a good guy. I should have just said, you're discharged. That's it. But I did think this device could be helpful to people. I multiple times said, I cannot be part of this financially. I cannot be on the board. I cannot do any of that. But he got more and more upset when I wouldn't meet with him to talk about it. And I kept saying, I'm not involved in that. And so I believe that his filing with the board is anger towards me that I didn't provide him an investor. So yes, I'm at fault for trying to help somebody like that, but I did think, and I made it very clear to him, I could not receive anything from this. And when an investor didn't come up, that's when he started getting very angry. This was all after I discharged him, because everything I tried, he said he knew better and could do it better.
Thank you for those comments. All right. Does anyone have questions for Dr. Olshan or Mr. Brevington? Dr. Stenhoff, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Dr. Olshan, I want to go back to your account of the firearm that was sitting on your desk, that you said, according to the summary, was about 15 feet away from you, which is about 5 large steps. Is it common practice for you to be sitting that far away from your clients during your therapy sessions?
No, I don't know whether that's phrased wrong. He was 15 feet away from where the gun was. I was about 7 or 8 feet away from him with our chairs facing each other, and the large desk was behind me.
I understand. Okay. Thank you for that clarification. The other is, could you help me understand why you would have had the firearm out in the first place? I understand, I'm familiar with firearms. What would be the reason you have the firearm sitting on your desk? And I understand you were going shooting later, I think is what you said. But what would be the rationale to have that out on your desk? Do you typically keep your keys and wallet on your desk as well?
No. What happened is when I got into the office that morning, and that's when I was borrowing an office from someone else, and it was a very big office. I had emptied out my briefcase onto the desk, which was behind me, because I turned to face the patient. I had put the gun at the top of the desk. I normally don't have a gun with me. And the office, I sort of keep it a little bit dark. That was one of the other things, is he said he was light sensitive. So the room was a little bit dark. I was running a little bit late. And I don't keep my wallet on the desk, but I actually do keep my keys on the desk and my phone behind me, everything. It was in the corner of the desk. I forgot about it. And then when we started talking, I saw him sort of look at me. And then at that point, I realized the gun was there. He never said that he saw it. At that point, I immediately said, by the way, there's a gun over here. Here's why I have it. I'm sorry. I left it out here. If you're more comfortable, I'll put it in my briefcase, or I'll put it into the drawer, and told him why I had it. There was never another discussion about it at all until, you know, he came up with a strange statement. And then we clarified it. I said, the next time that I saw him, I really apologize at that, but no, that's fine. I don't usually carry a gun to the office, and I'd forgotten that it was at the back side. It was a very big desk, and because it wasn't my office, I would turn my chair to face the patient, who would be sitting at another desk, but they were facing me. We were facing each other, and I'd forgotten about it, and that was the only reason why it was there.
And if you were to say in the last year, how often, or how many times, let's say it that way, have you brought a firearm to the office, whether it was the office you're borrowing or your own office? And then we'll start there.
I think that was the second time. The only other time was when I was going shooting after work, and I had a rifle in a case locked up, and it was in the other side of the room, because I do not believe it's a good idea to leave guns in a locked car if somebody breaks in. That was the only other time. Before that, I don't even think I did that for a number of years. And the only reason why I did it this time was a guard had made that comment.
And as far as the gun was, what kind of firearm was it? I'm assuming it was a pistol.
Yeah, it was a Sig Sauer P320.
Okay.
And it was in a holster.
Okay. And is that a revolver or?
It's a semi-automatic pistol.
All right. Sorry for my ignorance on that one. Did you have the clip in that?
I did have the clip in it. Yes, I did.
And did the clip have rounds in it as well?
Yes, it did. It doesn't do you any good for protection if you don't have a bullet in the gun.
Sure. Yeah, I understand that. Okay. Okay. So the firearm was on the desk, and with a clip with loaded rounds, but not in the, there was no round in the chamber, I'm assuming.
No, there is not.
Okay. Okay. Okay.
In a holster, it's secured in a holster too.
Okay. And, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Mr. Chair, I don't have any further questions at this time, but would like to reserve further if I.
Yep, absolutely. Okay, other board members, questions for Dr. Olshan? Yes, Dr. Stewart.
Thank you, Chair. Dr. Stenoff, thank you so much for your line of questioning. I'll dovetail mine in on that. Dr. Olshan, I think that, certainly the having firearms and carrying them is certainly approved of here in Arizona. And I also am a gun collector, can speak to that. And also, as most of us are aware, the murder of the state hospital psychiatrist, Dr. Stephen Pipp, several years ago. And so I caution all my colleagues to take, bear spray or a firearm or something, as long as they're responsibly using it and keeping it in a safe venue. I think the 9mm, with a magazine inserted without the chamber being loaded, is reasonable. My only concern is that you neglected to place it back in your briefcase or in the desk drawer prior to a patient coming in to see you. That was my only concern there. I think the rest of it, you behaved quite reasonably, as I would expect. Another concern that I had, if I may shift gears a little bit and go back to Dr. Medina's fine opening, and that is regarding the duality of roles and your attorney approached that you did not have a financial interest in that. But I have to consider that referring to your daughter and son-in-law would potentially be a financial interest to family members. And so I think that would be something to be considered. You indicate that you did present it to your daughter and that she apparently was not interested because of other interests that she had going on at the time, that you informed your client of that, and he became angry, wanting to know the names of potential investors. It created a problem that did not need to be created. So the dual role, not necessarily that you would benefit financially, but it created a potential for financial benefit to family members, and it created an angst within the treatment milieu that absolutely did not have to be created. And it was due to your volunteering that it might be a wise invention and you'd pass it on to a potential investor. I don't know if I rambled on there, and I apologize for that. If you have any comments to either of those about the firearm or the dual role suggestion.
Well, yes, I agree with you on the firearm, and that is my mistake. That actually, the room was so dark, I had forgotten about it. And when he came in, I had forgotten about it. And then when I remembered it, if I hadn't said anything, I doubt seriously he would have even seen it. The other thing is in terms of the investors, I did that after he was discharged, but I still shouldn't have done it. Even though I did not care for him as a patient because he was very negative and no matter what I did, it wasn't good enough, but I still felt this device may have a good use for people in the public, but I should not have done that. I don't think it was enough to keep telling him, even when he said, you can be on the board, you should get something for what you're doing. And I kept saying, no, but I should have thought it out more appropriately and maybe consulted somebody like my attorney, who probably would have advised me to say, no, don't do that. But I didn't do it in any, waiting till the end when therapy had ended to make that offer was not good enough. And I'm at fault for that. But I didn't do it out of any desire to make money. I did it because I thought it might be a good device to help people. So, but I am at fault for doing that.
Thank you for that response, Dr. Olson. Dr. Davey, I have no further questions at this point.
Thank you. Dr. Catarino.
Dr. Olshan, I was reading at one point that there was a suggestion to have a VR of Mount Hood and then your voice doing a meditation over that. Whose idea was that?
That was mine. That was my idea.
If he had agreed to that, would you have been paid for your time doing that?
No.
Okay.
No, I would not. But I tried it, and he said it didn't work and that it wasn't good enough. But in all my patients, when I make them an audio file, and maybe this is my wife is always complaining about not billing for it, saying you're using your time at night, I never charge for that because it's not reimbursable. But sometimes I feel it's important to have my voice doing a relaxation session that they can listen to before they go to sleep. I've done it with athletes and such. And maybe it's my own stupidity that I don't charge for it, but I never have. And there's no charge for that.
No, I've done that too without charge, but I thought that that also might have been used in the equipment that SP wanted.
Oh, no, this was totally different from what he was talking
about. That was not going to be used in connection with that.
Absolutely not. No.
Thank you.
Okay. Further questions for Dr. Olshan and for his attorney? I'm not going to spend time to rehash the thing, but I do, and I think that you've now owned up to the multiple relationship issue there. But you know, the one thing that does strike me is that you know you spoke of the fact that it's after the discharge that you start talking about this particular device and the things you can do for him, and so that in of itself creates that multiple relationship almost immediately and raises in the question and the why was he discharged? Was there a particular discharge you state because he wasn't making progress, or is the discharge now to go into a business venture with him or through a third party?
Discharge was mutual. He didn't feel he was getting anywhere.
Yeah, understood. But that this again raises to that question. And you suggest talking to your attorney about that. But you know, even talking to your peers, talking to other psychologists is a great place to start versus your attorney of like, hey, does this seem good? Does this not seem good? But I appreciate your comments on it. Other board members, if we don't have any further questions, we can move into deliberations. Dr. Medina, yes, please.
Oh, I wanted to make a motion to go into executive session, please.
Very good. We have a motion to go into executive session. Do I have a second?
Second.
Sounds like that is a second by committee. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none, we will go with Ms. Galvin into executive session for the purpose of legal advice.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, this is Ms. Poe. Am I to send Diana D?
Nope. Diana will not be in on this one, just Ms. Galvin.
All right, thank you.
May I wait till I see his attorney?
Mr. Chairman, Dr. Revington ran to the restroom. He'll be right back.
That's fine. I don't think we need him for where we're going. So I think that he's just beating the rest of us to where we need to go. So,
if I may, he is Dr. Olshan's attorney, and okay. I don't want to proceed without him. Maybe it's time for the entire board to take a comfort break till he returns.
Oh, he's back.
He's back. Okay.
All right. Very good.
So I knew as soon as I left, you would come back.
I know.
Sorry about that.
That's all right. We're all feeling the same thing.
I would like to move for a comfort break, Chair.
Yes. Would you like? Should we go ahead and do that now, or do we want to deal with temporarily tabling number 8 and then going to, and then so we could hear 9 when we come back from the comfort break?
Your discretion.
That's my motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
Thank you, Dr. Medina. From the second, any further discussion? My only discussion is that we are temporarily holding 8, but we'll hear 9 and revisit 8 after that. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstaining? Motion carries. Next order of business. Let's take a 10-minute comfort break. Be back at 4:15 or 1:15, and I'll see you then. Thank you.
And Mr. Chairman, I'm going to give the next CE code word. The next CE code word is dry heat. Dry heat. Thank you.
All right. I'll just we'll wait for indication when Mr. Dinar and Dr. Ekaterina are back, and then we'll have quorum again. And I can already see that Dr. Olshan and Mr. Brevington is also here. There's Dr. Caterino and there's Mr. Dino. All right. Here's we are back in full session. I appear everybody, appreciate everybody being prompt. And prior to break, we talked about temporarily tabling, and the motion was carried out that we will temporarily table number 8, and we will move on to number 9. Number 9 is the discussion consideration of possible action regarding status update only from the board staff regarding complaint 2403 against Neil Olshan. Agenda item number 9, Ms. Michelson, will you please provide a brief update to the board around these matters?
Yes, Mr. Chair. This agenda item is to notify the board that a complaint was received earlier this week against Dr. Olshan from what appears to be a former therapeutic client. The complaint contains allegations related to patient abandonment and billing fraud. Dr. Olshan was notified of this new complaint, number 24-03 for reference, on Tuesday. Staff was subsequently notified by Mr. Brevington that he would also be representing Dr. Olshan for this complaint. Given that this complaint was received just a few days ago, the investigation is pending at this time. Dr. Olshan's response to the complaint is due by September 1st. So this is just a brief update. That's all I have for the board right now, but please let me know if you have any questions.
And members of the board, this is Jean Galvin, and I do see that the agenda item is for a status update only. So if you have any particular questions about the complaint with respect to staff and any questions of a procedural nature, we can do that now. Given the fact that the agenda is limited to a status update only, Dr. Olshan will have the opportunity to present his answer the first part of September. That leaves agenda item number 7 and 8 for you to consider today. Given that we are still waiting for information on agenda item number 7, you may wish to consider having your discussion about number 9 at a later meeting once you receive his answer or response to the complaint. Yes. And that is my apologies, a status update only on number 9.
Greatly appreciate that. And I just want, in terms of the update, I want to make sure I heard correctly. And that is that a response to this complaint, of which Dr. Olshan and his attorney have been made privy to, obviously, is not due until September 1st.
That's correct.
Okay.
And the next board meeting, Jennifer, is...
Let me see. I believe it's Friday, September 1st, and then October 6th.
Okay. So there's, so Friday, so again, in terms of like timelines, we've got an evaluation that's going to go off at the end of August. We've got a complaint that we will have a response to a few days, that'll be due a few days after that. And then we don't have another board meeting until the end of September. Is that correct?
No, October 6th would be the next board meeting.
Well, that September 1st is the September meeting.
But we'll miss that one. I mean, we're not going to have, like, would we be able to talk about the response to the complaint on September 1st if it's due on the 1st?
No, you will not. The evaluation is the 28th of August. Obviously, that's going to take time to complete that report. So, you know, these matters may not come back until October if everything goes swimmingly.
Yeah. Again, the timeline just keeps getting pressed out further and further and further. So it's just concerning that it's concerning. All right. So that's the status update on 9. Appreciate that. We will now go back to item number 8. Unless there was anybody else that needed a status update or any other questions for board staff around 9. All right. Hearing none, we are going to roll back to item number 8. Again, discussion, consideration, possible action related to the initial case review of complaint number 2344 against Dr. Neil Olshan. And So I think where we were is we were, we had pretty much finished up our questions, I believe, around around the particular complaint. Do we have any further questions for Dr. Olshan or his counsel, Mr. Revington? And if not, we can enter deliberation around this. Are we not seeing any further questions? All right, if we're going to move into deliberations, then I'm going to have Dr. Medina kick us off with a summary, and we'll go from there.
I mean, there are certainly concerning accusations, complaints, if you will, that came to light. Some are due, you know, Dr. Olshan sort of took ownership of them, but it still to me, it concerns me, you know, not even thinking about this is something I need to consult with a colleague in terms of offering the patient, connecting them with investors. That wasn't something that really, it sounds like, even like crossed his mind. In hindsight, he said, well, if I had known, I would have consulted with an attorney, but the fact that it didn't happen before, it is concerning to me. I can see the gun issue. Well, it is concerning. I can see that it was perhaps a mistake and it wasn't used in any way to threaten the client, and it's the client never shared feeling necessarily threatened by it. So to me, what is most concerning is the fact that this relationship got muddied up by this offering of connecting the client with investors, and then how the situation transpired.
Thank you for that. Yeah, I think I'll just continue with the discussion there, and that, and, you know, in terms of deliberation, it's, you know, it's again, you know, taking a look at these, like, you know, timing is as I've already said, is frustrating to me. I understand, again, as I said, things happen fine. Then the we have delay in one of our potential matters, which, you know, is waiting to be able to go to its next step, pending the outcome of the fitness for duty. We've got this particular issue that, you know, raises concerns around particular activities around multiple relationships. In general, just, you know, in terms of safety and state of being for Dr. Olshan, some of these comments that were made today, and then we've got a pending one coming. And I, you know, I think to the point of maybe we need to have, you know, a discussion with not only, you know, that our attorneys, and I say attorneys because we have two involved in the three I just mentioned, that, you know, if we're going to think about consolidating these to move them forward together, you know, under one particular item, that we need to probably, you know, empower the attorneys to have that conversation. I'm concerned about the timelines. I'm concerned about the next shoe to drop here. And, you know, I agree, like, there's nothing here that right, like, we're going to, you know, recommend to stop practicing completely, but it's like, how many tiny little fires do we have before we have just a raging inferno? And, you know, I would think, you know, in retrospect, Dr. Olshan, as he's even thinking about, you know, the coming months and weeks and months ahead to sort through these things is reflecting upon his behavior and whether or not this is, you know, a viable path to, or whether or not we have the ability to see this through for, you know, until he hits, you know, what he's determined is his retirement date. And I'll stop there and see if others have other things they'd like to add to the deliberation.
Yeah.
I think Mr. Dinar has his hand up, Dr. Davis. Yes.
Sorry, Mr. Dinar. I was in deep thought of whether or not I actually articulated anything that I wanted to say, but I think I threaded the needle. Thank you, Mr. Dinar.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Davey. I'll echo what you said, Dr. Davey, regarding some of the concerns with these at least three pending matters that we have with respect to Dr. Olshan. I'll just say, I mean, in terms of the timing concern, we know on number 9 on the agenda, we have a response to the complaint due sometime in September. And at least in my mind, I mean, whatever the merits or demerits of that complaint may be, I think it's part of a due process that Dr. Olshan has time to respond to those allegations made in item number 9. So that isn't so much of a concern for me. The concern for me with the timing is the fitness for duty evaluation. I think with that, we have seen some pattern or some willingness, if you will, to sort of kick the can down the road. That is a huge concern in my mind. So I'll just add that as a comment, if nothing else, to what Dr. Davey said and what Dr. Medina said. Thank you.
Dr. Stewart.
Thank you, Dr. Davey. I certainly echo what has already been said. My concern isn't that Dr. Olshan is a firearms owner or that he acted responsibly with it. The only concern was that, certainly it was a mistake, as he readily admits, to leave it out in possible view. And I think he responded accurately in terms of what I would have wanted someone to do with a firearm. I think that in looking at it in total, we see a pattern. And I'm wondering if there's not a pattern of misjudgment that is there. And I think that Dr. Parker's examination may answer that question. I would certainly like that to be a question for that evaluator and to maybe address, is this a pattern that can be sustained, or is it something that needs to be attended to apparently by the board? If Dr. Olshan is not willing and able to cease practice on his own, then at some point, does the board have that responsibility in looking at it in total of a pattern of misjudgment? Thank you.
Yeah. Katrina.
I just want to make sure that we could meet on October 6th and have the response to the number 9 and the evaluation done. And so we can move forward at that point. And if the evaluation is not, if Dr. Olshan does not show for the evaluation due to illness or another matter, would there be any consequence? Because we already have extended it beyond the date that it was first announced that he needed to have the evaluation completed. So is this appropriate that there would be a consequence if it's not completed by our October meeting?
Dr. Katarina, I think that's a great point, right? We already have the failure to comply with one board order, right? And now, sitting before us in the first
place. There was an extension already, one, and then this was late. And so it would really be the third, I think.
Yeah. Ms. Galvin, what do you think about the discussion around the consolidation and as looking at that and having the attorneys discuss that, and by attorneys, yourself, Diane, and Mr. Brevington.
And Mr. Daya can chime in here as well, but it is happens very frequently that if you have one or more cases involving the same respondent going to the Office of Administrative Hearings, that the matters are often consolidated. It is just more efficient for everyone involved.
And that includes Dr. Olshan.
It's more, I would argue that it would be more efficient and economical for Dr. Olshan to have whatever cases may be going to formal hearing heard at the same time. Ms. Michelson does raise an issue with respect to number 9. It would still have to go through the CSC unless Dr. Brevington waives appearance at the CSC. Mr. Brevington and Mr. Olshan. Mm-hmm. And we can work that out between now and when the response is due.
Absolutely.
Diane, do you have anything to add to that with respect to the case you're consulting us on?
I do not have anything further to add to Jean's comments. I defer to her expertise in this. And again, I just think that it will be at the board's discretion, really a business decision as how you want to handle each case.
And to the board members, I guess my question is, if we consolidate this, are we consolidating it into a formal hearing on our part, or are we consolidating and moving this to an Office of Administrative Hearing? Like, what's our discussion there? And again, I'm thinking timeliness and to be able to move forward around this for not only for Dr. Olshan to have some closure or some actions around it, but also for those that have filed the complaints that have led to the fitness for duty and then the current complaint we were today and the one we have pending.
And this is Jean Galvin.
Dr. Dinar, I'm going to give you a doctorate honorary today, Mr. Dinar. And then Ms. Galvin, if you feel free.
I have a doctor of jurisprudence, but that doesn't count for purposes of this board. My comment in terms of, consolidating here versus in OA, it's really, I think, case number 7, I think we're just waiting for the fitness for duty evaluation. So if Dr. Olshan would be kind enough to inform the board promptly, maybe in 1 or 2 business days after that meeting with Dr. Parker occurs, I think that would give the board a lot of confidence in terms of, his willingness to comply with board orders and attend to matters promptly and expeditiously. But I think with that fitness for duty evaluation, at least that meeting done between Dr. Olshan and Dr. Parker, at least from my perspective, I would feel comfortable in consolidating in this board what are agenda items 7, 8, and 9, and whatever decision is to be made on individual claims in that consolidated case, I think this board will have then the option of referring all of those claims or maybe a subset of those claims to OA for a formal hearing.
Thank you. Ms. Galvin, did you want to chime in?
Not at this time. I think I'm good.
Okay. Mr. Dinar, do you, if we have any other deliberations, but do we think we're getting close to that motion?
I don't know, Dr. Davey, because I think I'm waiting for the fitness for duty evaluation. And if that meeting, for whatever reason, doesn't occur, I would then move for consolidation plus sending all of these matters to formal hearing, because at that point I would have that sort of like factual predicate to show that, Dr. Olshan has not complied with board orders, he's not willing to cooperate, et cetera.
And that's what I'm thinking in terms of the motion, right, Mr. Dinar? I'm kind of almost feeling like a failure. Like, we understand that the fitness for evaluation is coming. Should that be delayed for any reason whatsoever, that, would we frame a motion that then that failure on the particular date of which it's been reported to have to happen, if that did not happen, that then we would trigger the consolidation piece and get going versus having to come back and adjudicate the matter that, again, we've missed the date on the evaluation?
Yeah, I think we're on the same page with that, Dr. Davey. Yes, you clarified it better than I could have.
No, I mean, it's stepwise. I mean, you, I think you were laying out the steps. I think it's not at all or nothing. It's, get paid, get step one done, the evaluation, and things will, we can continue to move forward. Failure to do that's going to trigger some things as a consequence. I'm going to let Ms. Galvin respond to that and then come to Dr. Caterina.
So maybe I can assist. If I direct the board to number eight, do you believe, based upon the information that you have today, that this matter should be referred to formal hearing? And if so, please articulate the possible violations for formal hearing.
Just for reference, in case number eight, the potential violations that were recommended by the committee are on page 11 of your file.
Yeah, it's going to be the dual relationship and the, where is it at? Yeah, I mean, I think we've got ARS 32-2061-16 violating an ethical standard adopted by the board as it pertains to sections at least 3.5 multiple relationships and 3.06 conflict of interest of the APA's ethical principles and psychologists and code of conduct. I don't believe the harassment one is appropriate, but I'm open to discussion there. And then the engaging and offering, you know, the other one that's listed there, I'm not quite so sure about either, but I'll defer to my psychology friends. Yes, Dr. Caterina.
You're on mute, Linda.
And I guess
I was just going to say that if, as long as we have the evaluation completed by September 28th, I would be okay, even if there was a reason that it was canceled till September 1st, but what, that we have the report 30 days from when it was expected, which is September 28th. That's just what I was thinking. And then I'll look at the violations. I thought there might be unprofessional conduct because missing so many appointments. I was checking that.
Dr. Davey?
Yes, Dr. Stewart, thank you.
Thank you. Going back to your question, yes, I think there would be an issue in terms of dual relationships. I do not think that it would qualify for harassment, because the explanation that Dr. Ocean gave was reasonable and very realistic.
Yeah, I think the harassment really, I wasn't at the CSC meeting, but the text messaging responses, I think, were the things that most likely arose to the harassment discussion following the knowledge of the complaint as well. I can see that may be where that's arising from, because those responses in that text, those text messages to a past client are concerning to say the least.
I think you're absolutely correct. And I do agree with that. It was harassment to, in fact, Dr. Ocean even indicated that he should not have done that. And that could have been raised to a level of harassment with the text messages.
Yeah. And I believe the clarification there is as much as the firearm is concerning, that's not the harassment piece. The harassment piece is the bullying text to someone who's been in your care following a complaint being filed, in my opinion. So 3.3 and 3.05. Dr. Medina.
Yes. So I just want clarification. We are now only on item number eight, correct? Or are we?
Just number eight right now.
Just number eight right now. Okay.
Yep. Potential violations.
Jean is asking, and the reason Jean's asking us is if we see that this is something that has risen to a statute violation, right, then it triggers us moving into what? Into the formal hearing side of things.
Correct.
Formal interview. So her question is asking us, do we believe there's a statute violation? And I posit that yes, there is, at a minimum around 3.03 with regard to the text messages, and 3.05 of multiple relationships, and 3.06 around conflicts of interest under APA's ethical principles of psychologists and code of conduct, and that follows in line with ARS 32-2061-16-DD.
Yeah, I agree. Thank you.
So you could, I'm sorry, if there are no other potential violations, you could vote on this finding potential violations, And then we'll take the next step after a vote, presuming that it passes.
All right, well, then I'll go ahead and make the motion that we move this to formal hearing based on the finding of facts that this committee believes that there was a violation of an ethical standard adopted by the board. That's under ARS 32-2061-16-DD. And those standards are those outlined by APA's Ethical Principles of Psychologists and Code of Conduct. The ones that are in question here are 3.03, Other Harassment. And I'll clarify that is in regard to the text messages that were sent by Dr. Olshan to the complainant following information that the complaint had been received by the board. Also 3.05 around multiple relationships and 3.06 conflict of interest.
Wait, I have a question. Do we think that anything about not following the board orders because the evaluation was scheduled
that's
so late?
That's number seven. That's for number seven.
We got it. Okay.
So a motion on the table. Do I have a second?
Second.
Thank you, Dr. Medina. Any further discussion around that discussion that I would question is to my psychology friends, ARS 32-2061-16G. Is there any consideration there with regard to the psychologist activity not congruent? Or do we feel like that did not reach that threshold?
I don't know that it reaches the threshold.
Yeah. I'm of that same mind.
I concur with Dr. Stewart.
I agree with Dr. Stewart.
Any further discussion? All right, hearing none, I'll call the question. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstaining? All right, motion carries.
So my next suggestion may be, given that number seven has already been moved to formal hearing before the Office of Administrative Hearings, with respect to number eight, it would be the state's position that the board direct the attorneys to discuss consolidation of eight and number seven. And I think that could be a directive rather than just a vote.
I believe that's by consensus with the board. I believe that's what we would like to see happen. Absolutely. Does anybody have a differing opinion? Please now voice that. But I believe that that's where we're heading with this, is to get those consolidated.
Okay. And it would be the state's request. Again, I'm asking on behalf of the state, not as a legal advisor, that if Dr. Olshan fails to appear at the evaluation set for August 28th, that number seven be moved to formal hearing and no longer wait for any evaluation, but that an additional allegation would be added for failure to comply with the board order. So it doesn't have to come back to the board. And I would ask that on behalf of the state that be made into a motion. And the motion again, perhaps on the state, would be failure to appear at the August 28th evaluation is a violation of the board order, and that the matter would then be moved to formal hearing as soon as practicable.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, we have the motion and we have a second. Any further discussion? Seeing none. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstaining?
And if I may, Mr. Chairman, one more issue. Is there consensus among the board that in the event Dr. Olshan wishes to voluntarily surrender his license, that you would accept that in lieu of the aforementioned actions?
Yes.
I believe that the committee, I believe that the board would accept that as a resolution.
Yes.
Thank you. Do I hear any kind of dissension?
I am not sensing any from the head bobs on the screen.
No. Thank you. That's all I have on behalf of the state.
Okay. And so with that, if I'm correct, we have now closed and can move on from 7, 8, and 9. Correct. Yes, 7, 8, and 9. Ms. Galvin, that's correct, right? That just pretty much.
Okay. From my perspective, yeah. Yes. And staff, do you have anything else? Okay.
Very good. It is now 1:46. Okay, we're going to move on. Mr. Revington and Dr. Olshan, board staff will be in touch based on the discussion today. Hopefully, we can find a clear path forward, and they'll be in touch soon. Thank you for your time. Thank you. All right. It is now 1:47 in Arizona, and we are going to move on to item number 10. Ms. Bakanon, are we good with that?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I only have a brief summary. I'll be very succinct. This matter concerns the application for Dr. Ann Eberhardt. It consists of a continuation of the substantive review of the application. Most of the board members will recall at your previous meeting that that review included the review of the results of a fitness for duty evaluation to which Dr. Eberhardt was ordered to submit. And so in executive session, you gathered a lot of facts and information from the applicant. You, of course, reviewed the report. What you determined to do is to table any action on the application and the recommendation or the report in order to enable the evaluator, Dr. Nicole Lazarowitz, to join you. You had specific questions for her. And so she agreed to be here. I do see that she is present. I've confirmed she is prepared to address your questions. I believe that the fact-finding process that you wish to continue will need to occur in executive session. Ms. Galvin can confirm that. And so what I believe is that really this is a targeted effort to gather more information to augment that which you have previously identified and discussed. Are there any questions about that?
I don't believe so.
So, Mr. Chair, maybe have both the applicant and Dr. Lazarowitz introduce themselves for the record, and then you may want to consider propose a motion for the discussion in executive session.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. And I can already see that Dr. Eberhardt is here. You are represented by counsel. Yes, right there. Okay. Very good. Any questions for Ms. Bakanon before we go forward? All right. Very good. Dr. Eberhardt, if you'd like to introduce yourself, you and your counsel, and if you'd like to both or singular to make a statement to the board at this time, you can begin now.
Hi, I'm Dr. Ann Eberhardt. Good to be here. I appreciate considering being licensed in Arizona, so I'll pass it.
Yes, my name is Kelsey Whalen. I am the attorney for Dr. Eberhardt.
Even though your name says you are Nicole? On the bottom. Oh, there it goes. It looked like Nicole was speaking. All right, there's Kelsey. I see you up there. Now I found you. I thought for some reason that Dr. Lazarowitz was talking. All right, thank you, Kelsey. And did you have any statement at this time?
I think I would like to give a brief statement, but I think it may be appropriate to wait until the executive session, just so.
Very good. And I'll go ahead and make a motion that we move to executive session for the purposes of receiving protected health information.
And so, legal advice.
And legal advice.
Second.
I'm going to give that second to Mr. Dinar. Sorry, Dr. Stewart.
That's okay.
All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none. Any abstaining? No. Let's go ahead and move to executive session, please. Very good. I see that we've got our board members all back and beamed through. Dr. Catarino. Where's Dr. Catarino? We can go. There she is. All right. We're good to roll. We have quorum again. I believe we concluded our legal advice and we'd like to have some discussion, I believe, amongst members of the board around how we move forward. Who'd like to kick us off?
I can make a motion.
Okay. Go ahead.
Start with a motion, then we'll get some discussion in. All right.
Okay. I move that we accept Dr. Lazarett's report, and including her addendum, which she will compile, and I think to follow it with the recommendations that Dr. Eberhardt continue in treatment, including the taking of any appropriately prescribed psychotropic medications, and that she, and also especially items, the first, third, and fourth bullet points on page 12. I agree with Mr. Dinar to omit the second one with the graduate level education course.
Yeah.
Is that a second, Dr. Medina?
The motion would be to grant her temporary license.
So, yeah, super.
Immediately put it on probation. She would have to have 12 months work experience and then get reevaluated. She would, following the recommendations in the evaluation by Dr. Lazarett's, the temporary license require that she work under supervision. The supervision would be increased for 1 hour per 10 hours of work completed each week. Is that correct?
I accept that friendly addendum. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And if it is...
I'm sorry. After 12 months, after 12 months of being under supervision of psychological work, then undergoing another psychological evaluation at that point.
Dr. Lazarett, because she knows her?
It could be, but we'll have to kind of figure that out when we get to 12 months.
Okay.
And would we require an update every... we require an update from the supervisor every 6 months, every 3 months? How often will we require updates?
Typically, the treating physicians and counselors provide quarterly, as would the employer, quarterly and or sooner if there's an issue.
That sounds good.
I second that. Yeah.
Okay, so we have a motion. We have a second. Do we have any further discussion? Just for clarification, can we read that back, either board staff or Ms. Tobin?
So a temporary license would be granted. After 12 months of working under this supervision, she would undergo an additional psychological evaluation. We are following the recommendation of Dr. Lazarett's with respect to bullet point 1, 3, and 4. The license would be granted and immediately put on probation, and both her treating physicians and counselors and psychologists would file reports every quarter, as would her employer. Supervision is increased and required for 1 hour weekly for every 10 hours worked.
All right.
And I do need a roll call.
Absolutely. So we have a motion. We have a second. Any further discussion after that clarification? Hearing none. Ms. Poe, will you give us the roll call, please?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Davey?
Yes.
Mr. Dinar?
Yes.
Dr. Catarino?
Yes.
Dr. Medina?
Yes.
Dr. Stenhoff?
Yes.
Dr. Stewart?
Yes.
Vote is unanimous. Motion carries.
Thank you very much. With that, I believe we are going to have Dr. Stewart depart us for a little bit, and we are going to have Dr. Malott join us. And then I think we can go ahead and maybe take we can do another code word and then maybe another comfort break.
Thank you.
Okay. Code word first.
The next CE code word is desert. Desert. Thank you.
Very good. And what time do we expect Dr. Malott to join us?
Mr. Chair, we confirmed 2:30 with her, so I will be looking for her and will reach out if she's more than a couple of minutes late. So I think a break is appropriate right now.
Very good. Let's take 10 minutes and return at 5:40, 2:40 your time.
Okay. Thank you.
Efficient. Highly efficient. Thank you for joining us, Dr. Malott, and allowing us to continue with Juan.
I went to the agenda and found the meeting ID, so I was able to join. So
very good. And I see that we have Dr. Stenhoff, Mr. Dinar, Dr. Caterino, Dr. Medina, Dr. Malott, myself. So I believe we're at quorum. Very good. All right. And it is, I got to do some math, 2:41. And we are going to move to item number 11. And item number 11 is discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding to eligibility for determination for a potential ramp participant. Ms. Michelson, can you give us a very high-level overview? And then most likely we will move into an executive session following that.
Yes, Mr. Chair, my only comment actually in open session is that the board will be reviewing a request from a licensee to enter the board's ramp program. So I'll reserve the rest of my comments for executive session as it relates to PHI.
Very good. I will go ahead and make the motion to move to executive session for the or to be able to receive legal advice as well as PHI. We'll take the board with us as well as the individual identified as ramp in the meeting now. Do I have a second? Thank you, Mr. Dinart. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Any abstaining? Motion carries. We'll now move.
This notation is just for recording purposes only. This is Ms. Poe with the board office. Just to note for the record that Dr. Stewart rejoined the meeting at 2:57 p.m. and joined executive session. Thank you.
Okay, I think I see 1, 2, 3. Yep, we've got everyone. Actually, we're plus one now that Dr. Stewart is back from his excitement for the day. And okay. So as we come back out of executive session, I will go ahead and say that we will, to be able to close out this matter, that we will move in the direction that was decided inside of the executive session. So move, so board staff to move to proceed as directed in the
second.
Thank you. Any further discussion? All right. Hearing none, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstaining? Motion carries. Thank you very much. Board staff will be in contact with you in the coming days. Thank you.
Dr. Davey?
Yes.
I don't think I've met Dr. Stenhouse.
Oh, yes. Well, welcome.
I'm just wondering, because I thought you were the lawyer. But.
Yeah, Dr. Stenhouse is, earlier this morning joined the board for his first official board meeting as he is stepping into the position previously held by Dr. Diana Davis Wilson. So he is a board certified behavior analyst at the doctorate level.
Okay.
Earlier today he was excited to join us, and I'm thinking that may be waning at this point, but
well, so far welcome, so good, Dr. Davis.
Yes,
nice to meet you, Dr. Malott.
Welcome to the board. I was just wondering, first I thought you were the legal counsel, but then you didn't.
Who's this person in the executive meeting?
I started counting the numbers, and then I realized.
Something's amiss.
All right. Well, now that we have that informal introduction, we'll call that good. Back on. I'm going to try to catch up and see where we're at here. I think we continue 7, 8, 9.
Well, Mr. Chair, we have the option at this time because Dr. Malak came in with the save off the bench. We can go to the agenda item for which we desperately need her for quorum. And then if Dr. Stewart and everyone else can stay, then we maintain quorum until 4:30, at which time we lose Mr. Dinar. So I guess my recommendation is number 17, the application that Dr. Malat will lead, from which Dr. Medina will recuse. And then we go back to, we figure out the sequence of 12, 13, and 14.
Yeah, and we're going to run into an issue where it's 7 p.m. where I'm at now that, you know, for... By the time Mr. Dinard's done, I will also probably need to wrap that up. But
it is 6 p.m. here. Mr. Dinard, are you on the East Coast?
I'm on the East Coast.
No, I'm on the West Coast, but I have a prior commitment which requires me to...
No, because I saw San Francisco, so right. I figured...
And meet some people, smile and shake hands starting at 4:30. So
yeah, I'm on the East Coast and I'm yawning. So that's the reason.
I'm with you, Dr. Malat. I'm on the East Coast as well. I'm in the East, nowhere near a coast. Okay, let's get going then. Dr. Malat, the one that we need you for is item number
17.
Thank you for that. I'm going to flip through my pages and find us here. Here we go, 16 and 17.
Okay. By the way, Kathy said that if you weren't here, I would do it. So if you're not ready, I'm happy to do it.
Go ahead.
All right. Okay, just to save you, because I'm sure you're tired. This, number 17 is Dr. Mary Seller Smith, and she is a graduate of Midwestern in August 21. It's an APA program. Her internship, Southwest Behavioral, and APA approved. She has a postdoc. There was an issue in the postdoc that she was pregnant, took off a little bit of time, then came back. So she began in 10 and completed her postdoc in 11-22. She did pass the ECCC. And she has a temporary license from July 22, which would expire 8/25. She has references. She's completed the self-query. To me, it seemed okay that she would be able to get a regular non-temporary license.
I second.
All right. So we have a motion. We have a second. Any further discussion? All right. Well, hearing none, all in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? All right. Any abstaining? No. Motion carries unanimously. Thank you very much. We can now cross off number 17. And thank you. 17's out. Ms. Packenham, what do you think?
12, 13, and 14, maybe out of an abundance for safety purposes, maybe if Mr. Dinar's ready, we'll do 14. We've waited all day and we haven't seen the party to that matter, though. So maybe in to deference out of the others, we could go to 12 or 13, or you could have a rock, paper, scissors tournament. I don't know. You could go anyway.
Let's go ahead and let's get 14 resolved. Discussion, consideration, possible action relating to initial for the following complaints regarding possible title violations. This is item number 14. Mr. Dinar, you are the lead. You may proceed.
Thank you, Dr. Davey. So this is a title violation against respondent Austin McCall, who holds a PsyD. If you all will recall, or many of you will recall, maybe I shouldn't count Dr. Stenhoff as part of that, but as many of you will recall, Dr. McCall surrendered her license in December of 2022. So it was by a consent agreement. But later on, as a result of this complaint, we became aware that she had submitted a few psychological evaluation reports to the court, to the Department of Child Safety in March and April. So license surrendered in December, report psychological evaluations done, reports done in March and April of 2023. So during the complaint screening committee, we had a chance to speak with Dr. McCall. She admitted that she did these reports after surrendering the license. She admitted that she did not inform her then current employer that she had voluntarily surrendered the license. So in the complaint screening committee, the committee decided to forward this case to the full board with the recommendation that the board issue a letter of cease and desist. And that concludes my summary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Dinart. I appreciate that. Any questions for Mr. Dinart around this matter?
Mr. Dinart, did Dr. McCall indicate that she was going to stop?
She did not. I mean, in the committee, the reason that the employer was involved at all is because I believe our staff reached out to the employer for additional details, and that's what alerted the employer to you know what was occurring. And Dr. McCall expressed regret at doing this, and she had, you know, some family concerns that required her to, you know, stay employed. But as far as the board is concerned, you know, at least the committee was of the view that, you know, we have to protect the public interest, and the fact that she didn't come forward after she surrendered the license to inform everybody involved, you know, the employer, all of the pending cases that she was working on, that she no longer is licensed. I think that was an aggravating factor against Dr. McCall.
And if I may add, to add on to what Mr. Dinar said, what my understanding of the situation was that Dr. McCall was working for an agency who had a contract with the Department of Child Safety to conduct psychological evaluations for parents who were involved. And Dr. McCall did not tell her employer that she had surrendered her license. So several months later, she had conducted, I believe it was 4 psychological evaluations on parents. At that time, a DCS representative didn't recognize her name and discovered after going on the board's website that she was in fact no longer licensed. And then at that time they contacted board staff filing a complaint about this issue. And just one other thing, my understanding is that all those parents are now required to have to redo that evaluation essentially with a licensed professional due to her conduct.
Thank you for that added information. I do want to just going back, appreciate the clarification and the questions from Mr. Dinar. Is the complainant present? Yes. I don't believe.
She informed me she could not attend today.
Okay, very good. And I don't believe that Dr. McCall is available to us either, correct?
She was notified of today's meeting, but I did not hear back from her.
All right. If that's the case, I'd like to make a motion that we accept the complaint committee screening committee's recommendations of the cease and desist.
Second.
I have a first and we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All right. Do we need to have a roll call for this, given that it is a cease and desist? Ms. Galvin's not there.
I think let's do one, Mr. Chair, just so it's on the record.
Fair enough. Thank you very much, Ms. Pope. Catching everybody off guard with my roll call.
Sorry, couldn't get myself off mute. The next CE code word is drought. Drought. Thank you.
And Ms. Poe, we'd like a roll call for the motion to issue a cease and desist to Austin McCall.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Davey?
Yes.
Mr. Dinar?
Yes.
Dr. Catarino?
Yes.
Dr. Medina?
Yes.
Dr. Malott?
Yes.
Dr. Stenhoff?
Yes.
Dr. Stewart?
Yes.
Vote is unanimous. Motion carries.
Very much. And then with that, going to go ahead and let's go. Well, let's just go in order. Number 12. Ms. McIntyre, we have 12, 13, and 18 left. Is that correct? If we're all keeping score at home. 12, 13, and 18. Number 12, discussion, consideration, possible action relating to the Committee on Behavior Analyst recommendation regarding complaint number 2304 against Chelsea Moore and recommendation that Ms. Moore's then employer be referred to the Arizona Attorney General's Office, Arizona Department of Health Services, Arizona Department of Insurance Access, Behavioral Health Centers of Excellence Accreditation, and the application reimbursement sources for possible investigation. Agenda item 12 consists of reviewing the action and recommendations for a title violator case that was reviewed by the Committee on Behavior Analysts over the last couple of sessions. Additionally, the committee has forwarded a recommendation of a referral for a behavior analytics service agency, Centria, to various state entities for possible adjudication or possible research or investigation into some practices. I'm the lead on this matter and will provide a brief summary and overview to include the committee's recommendations. So as mentioned, this case came before us with regard to a Title Act violation. The recommendation from the committee upon discussion with Ms. Moore on several occasions was to dismiss this complaint against her and to move forward as it pertained to her actions and to her understanding as to practicing in the state of Arizona without a license. She is no longer practicing in this state. She has moved on. She was more than cooperative as we looked at the issues that presented themselves from her behavior, which opened up some further questions with regard to the agency. And so the initial complaint with regard to Ms. Moore's behavior, the committee recommends that be dismissed. The second part of this discussion was around information that was obtained during this review with regard to behavior by the employers in TRIA and how they leveraged what they termed as a mid-tier provider within the state. This term was used multiple times within the documentation that was provided to us from the employer. And it just continued to raise questions for the committee. Committee tried to get further clarification around the use of this term, invited them to attend. We received some information, but not all information. The committee was concerned at the information that came about as that there is no mid-tier provider in the state of Arizona. There is no mechanism by which an individual that is not licensed can provide behavior analytics services. There's information that's provided and bookmarked within your complaint records that Ms. Moore was a mid-tier clinician. The discussion is that mid-tier workers essentially are under the supervision of a licensed behavior analyst. Ms. Moore did not believe that was the case. There was other records that provided us information from the employer that they have mid-tier providers that are supervised by Arizona licensed behavior analysts when rendering services to patients. There is no mechanism that allows that, again, within our statutes or within the rules that are provided by ACCESS. The concern is that this is unfortunately somewhat dubious, and that we believe that the agencies we identified are more qualified to understand whether or not there's anything there, as we do not have jurisdiction over an agency for their billing practices. That's my summary. I'm happy to answer questions from the board. All right.
Mr. Dr.
Yes.
Mr. So if we don't have jurisdiction over the agency, I understand for sure. Who is that referred to?
The jurisdiction that we identified were those that would be involved in fraud, waste, and abuse, perhaps billing under false pretenses. So that would be the Arizona Department of Insurance. It for sure would be Access, the Attorney General's Office. They might want to look at that, as well as the Arizona Department of Health Services. There's also an accrediting body for some behavior analytic agencies. There's no requirement to do that, but there's the Behavioral Health Center of Excellence. I believe also we had identified JCO as another potential area that we could, or another potential organization that could be provided information.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions I can answer? All right. Hearing none, I'll make the motion that we accept the committee's recommendations.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. I apologize for interrupting you. It's my understanding that Centuria's legal representative, Mr. Flynn Carey, is president and wanted to address the board. So this may be the time to hear from him.
Yes. Hello, Mr. Carey. Feel free to unmute yourself and thank you for being here.
Of course. Thank you, Dr. Davey. I did observe the BA meeting previously, and I am appearing as counsel for Centuria just to make a brief statement. I do want to start by stating that Centuria values its relationship with Arizona and its licensing agencies. I know a concern at the BA meeting was the perception that Centuria didn't participate in the underlying matter involving Ms. Moore. I would note that Centuria did comply with this subpoena and the investigation, while also simultaneously having to respect the PHI of its clients and also being mindful, as I believe Dr. Stewart mentioned, the jurisdictional limitations that the board faces when regulating companies. We also did meet with board staff to better get an understanding of the concerns that the BA committee members had. I just briefly wanted to appear, and I thank you for the opportunity to briefly comment on this case.
Thank you, and I appreciate your comments. I do hold a little bit of the PHI question. Obviously, the board has the ability to look into case files, so I'm not sure exactly how that squares up with me, but that's neither here nor there. I appreciate you being here today. I appreciate you listening in on the CBA discussion as well.
Thank you, Dr. David.
All right. Any other individuals or parties
yes. like? I just had a question. If Ms. Moore decides in the future that she would like to be licensed in Arizona, is that possible? I know she had difficulty collecting materials, but if she is able, what is that acceptable or not?
There were no sanctions held against her. We dismissed the matter for her.
Okay.
Are there any other parties that would like to speak on this matter? If not, I believe I made the motion. And do I have a second, or I can restate?
Second.
Mr. Stewart, or Dr. Stewart, thank you for the second. Dr. Stenhoff, you got to get faster. And you haven't met one of our other committee member or board members. That's
no work on that, don't I?
All right, so I have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All right, hearing none, then all in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstaining? Motion carries. Thank you. Moving on. Number 13, discussion, consideration, possible action relating to the Committee on Behavior Analysts recommendation regarding the following complaints and or initial case review for the following complaints. I am the lead. Agenda items 13A through 13D consist of recommendations for the cases that we have adjudicated and recently reviewed at the Committee on Behavior Analysts. I'm the lead for all four cases and provide a brief summary and overview of them and include the recommendations for the board to consider. 1 second, we'll toggle over to that group of documents. Same. All right. We'll begin with complaint 2319, Paige Huff. In this matter, the board is the committee is recommending to the board a consent agreement for probation and practice monitoring for 1 year at a minimum. In this particular case, the findings of fact were with regard to incident reporting, an individual being injured on site, and that the information that was provided around the complaint and then the subsequent investigation showed that there were many shortcomings when it came to tracking of incident reports, interagency communication related to mandatory reporting, also issues with in terms of documentation, missing notes, and the agency's representatives that were a part of this matter, myself included, even stated to us that they continue to develop and modify policies and procedures and documents to this date and understood the shortcomings. Further, the respondent was unable to produce the original incident report that related to the allegations that the agency had been, or the agency service provider had been accused of. And so with that, through the deliberations, again, a consent agreement with the practice monitoring for a minimum of 1 year is with the recommendation from the committee. And I think, Ms. Galvin, should we take these one at a time? Or do you want me to, since that one is a disciplinary matter, would you like me to pull that one off and do a roll call on that?
Yes, please. Okay. And I believe that Ms. Huff's attorney, Sarah Stark, is present, so you may want to give her an opportunity to make a statement if she wants to at this time.
Absolutely. I'm sorry, Ms. Stark. I saw you there, and I did not connect the dots to you being here. Do you have any statement that you'd like to make at this time?
That is perfectly okay. Hello, Dr. Davey, members of the board. I would just like to say that Ms. Huff has signed the proposed consent agreement that the committee offered, so we would be asking the board to accept that at this time. Thank you.
Ms. Stark, I appreciate that. Any questions for me with regard to this? Dr. Stenhoff is also well versed in this, as he has sat through as a member of the committee on behavior analysts. He's also available to answer questions. If I don't hear any further questions and there's no questions from Ms. Stark, then I will go ahead and make the motion that we accept the committee's recommendation for consent agreement for probation and practice monitoring for a minimum of 1 year for Paige Huff. Do I have a second?
Okay.
Thank you, Dr. Stewart. I have a motion, a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none. All those in, disciplinary matter. Ms. Galvin, do you want a roll call? Can I get a roll call, please, Ms. Pope?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Dr. Davey?
Yes.
Mr. Steinar?
Yes.
Dr. Catarino?
Yes.
Dr. Medina?
Yes.
Dr. Malott?
Yes.
Dr. Stenhoff?
Yes.
Dr. Stewart?
Yes.
Vote is unanimous. Motion carries.
Thank you very much. We will now move on to the case involving Diamond Smith, and that is going to be 15, is that CDD? That is complaint number 20, I guess. Yeah, I'm going to do them in this order. This is actually complaint 2322, Diamond Smith. And for Ms. Smith, this is a recommendation for a non-disciplinary letter of concern and an order for continuing education. Ms. Parts, as you will see in the documentation, she was a party for the agency that we just discussed in the previous matter. She was one that was involved in the lack of the ability to produce the original incident report regarding the allegation. There was concerns about the reporting, failure to report, record keeping as well for this individual. In this case, because of her position, the committee felt that the continuing ed and the non-disciplinary order was more in line, as she was not the agency owner or involved in some of the other aspects that Ms. Huff was involved in, and thus the non-disciplinary CEU order for this one. Questions for me on this case? All right. Hearing none, then I will make the motion that we accept the the non-disciplinary order and the order for continuing education from Ms. Smith. Do I have a second?
Second.
Thank you, Dr. Medina. And
after Dr. Stenhoff.
Oh, Dr. Stenhoff, slow. Thank you very much, Dr. Medina. This is a non-disciplinary matter, so I believe we can do all in favor. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? All right, very good. Any abstaining? No. Motion carries. Thank you. Moving on to a matter with Dylan Huff, and that is going to be B on this matter. Let's see here. Complaint number 2320 for Dylan Huff. And I don't believe that Mr. Huff or, and I guess I should have checked, I don't believe Ms. Smith was here or her representation. And I apologize if I missed her, but I don't believe so. And I don't believe that Mr. Huff or Mr. Quinn are present either in that matter. Very good. Upon review of the information that was provided with us with regard to this particular case, upon review, there was nothing that rose to a violation of statute for Mr. Huff in this particular matter. There are, I will say, there are other matters that are coming forward to this board later. But for this particular case, with regard to the conduct, the committee saw it for 4-0 that this should be dismissed, as there was not enough information to move forward for Mr. Huff. We'll go ahead. Any other questions for me on Mr. Huff? Okay, hearing none, I'll make the motion that we accept the committee's recommendation for dismissal.
Second.
I'll second.
Mr. Stewart. Dr. Stenhoff. Wow. Thank you, Mr. Stewart.
Sorry, Dr.
Yeah. Any further discussion? Oh, very good. Hearing none. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Very good. Thank you very much. The final matter in this series is complaint number 2321 with Abigail Barnes. This was regarding around supervision notes. Again, she provided us ample documentation to alleviate any of the concerns the committee had. Upon review of the complaint, as well as the information provided by the licensee, the committee was unanimous in wanting to dismiss this one as well. Any questions around this matter from Ms. Barnes? And Ms. Barnes, I do not see that she is here or her, and she was not represented by counsel in this matter. Hearing no questions, I make the motion that we accept the committee's recommendation for dismissal.
Second.
Dr. Stewart, thank you for the second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Did I get everybody's eye? I think I got everybody's eye. Any opposed? Any abstaining? Very good. Motion carries. Thank you for that. Thank you to the committee for their hard work on those matters as well. And we will continue on. I believe that brings us to appropriations, Ms. Heidi. And actually, I'm pleased to know that We've got everybody except for Mr. Nguyen. So let's why don't you provide us a summary of item number 18, Ms. Pakkinen, and then we can hopefully make a motion on this.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I actually think we can move through this agenda item fairly quickly, depending on how amiable everyone feels at this point in the day. So what I have done is I have summarized for you a series of, they're described as funding issues. They are budget increase requests that I am preparing for submission for our fiscal year 2025 budget. So just to be clear, we're about a month into fiscal year 2024. The fiscal year begins July 1, ends June 30th. So our appropriation for the current fiscal year is set. It can't be changed. And so funding for these initiatives, the earliest they would be available if approved would be July 1, 2024. So there are four of them.
It's a higher than typical amount, but these are all recommendations that I believe are very reflective of the data that I've collected and present to you. They are very reflective too, I think, of some challenges that the agency has been dealing with. And so they, I assure you, they're very thoughtfully prepared, and I hope supported in the process. So the first page of your memorandum essentially identifies what each of them addresses. And then there is a fiscal breakdown by the two funds that this agency manages, the psychology fund and the behavior analyst fund. So we have to have a precise accounting for both. So as you can see, our request has the biggest impact on the behavior analyst fund, but that is largely driven by what is, I think, an extremely compelling need to have a behavior analyst investigator. In fact, that's, in terms of priority, that is funding issue number one. I, of course, as part of this analysis, am assured that both the psychology and the behavior analyst fund, that we have enough in the bank, if you will, to sustain the funding of these additional initiatives as long as we need to. So the growth rate in psychology is not as dramatic as it is for the psychology, or the, excuse me, the behavior analyst fund, but with 1.2 million and growing in psychology and rapidly approaching 800,000 in the behavior analyst fund, and, you know, just dramatic increase due to our licensee numbers climbing at extraordinary rates, I'm really confident that we can sustain these costs. So maybe just a brief overview of each one, and then what my ultimate goal would be for the board to support each of these, whether collectively or individually, with a motion, because I think I want, I know I want that to be reflected in the funding request, just so that's really clear to the Office of Strategic Planning and Budget and to the Joint Legislative Budget Committee, how committed that this agency is to acquiring the resources that we need to protect the public. So I'm ready to proceed through each one, and I can pause, answer questions, entertain a motion if there's interest. How does that sound?
Yes. Can we do the motion all at the end after you kind of like give a summary, or do we need to approve them at one by one? What's your preference?
Either way.
I think we'll then do them all at the end unless somebody wants to pull one out that they're uncomfortable with, but I doubt that. Okay. Let's go through the pieces.
So funding priority one, as I've already described, is a request for a half-time investigator dedicated to behavior analyst investigations. I don't think I need to go into an explanation of the rationale and the need. I think that's very clear. I will say that the Committee on Behavior Analysts did review all of this material and in terms of the data, and forwarded a recommendation to this board to support this specific funding initiative. We didn't get to it on the last agenda, but you're seeing it with the companion requests. Does anyone have any questions or comments in particular about the need or what the data is clearly supporting as I see it? Okay.
No.
Mr. Dayanar, yes.
Yes. Mr. Chair, thank you, Ms. Pakkanen, for bringing this issue. So my question is in relation to you mentioning that the behavior analyst investigator would be a part-time position. Is there any value to asking for one FTE and then maybe, you know, that gives you the flexibility of then either hiring part-time, or if in the future we need to convert that to a full-time position, you would have that prior authorization.
Mr. Diner, I think that's an excellent question, because as I was making these entries, presumptive, I know, into the budget submission system, which that's all due on September 1st and will be completed well ahead of September 1st, I actually put a 1.0 FTE into the system as part of the request. So it may be that, you know, we just have the funding for the part-time, but it's a better strategy to have the full-time position approval. And then as we continue to establish a growing need for that to increase, then we can do that incrementally over time. I feel like you're intruding a little bit on what I'm doing here, but in a good way. Thank you.
And I also wonder that from like a negotiation point, do we ask for a full one, knowing that, you know, they're going to look for potential places to cut? You know, if we kind of come in with, you know, with a higher mark, does that help us in that respect?
Yes, quite potentially. You know, we never know. And so it's sort of a guessing game on the part of the agencies. You know, what do we think will happen? Do we request 1.0 to be shot down entirely, or do we request 0.5 and hope for the best? I mean, there's that dialogue with our budget analyst in the governor's office is sort of ongoing. And I do have a conversation with him next week to just sort of see, to take his temperature about the half-time versus full-time FTE. I have it in the system right now as a full-time, but we would potentially only have the funding in the beginning as halftime. And then as the numbers of cases increase, which maybe that's prophetic, I don't know, but then we can ask for the permission to spend more money for a full time.
So does it help you, Ms. Packman? Sorry, Dr. Davey. Does it help you if you get authorization from the board, or basically the board wants to give you, let's say, the flexibility of either requesting one or 0.5, knowing that the board is supportive? Would that be preferable versus the board voting only on the 0.5 right now?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Diner, yes. I think I'm answering in the affirmative to your first question, yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anything else on funding request one? Okay, so moving on to funding request two. Anyone who's been reading my executive director reports over the past year understands how I've anguished over the fact that we have not been appropriated an adequate spending authority to cover our ERE employee related expenses. So these are the benefits to which the staff are entitled by statute. My exploration has led me to understand, the amount that we have been appropriated is a shortfall, in terms of, you know, what the actual costs are. It's varied from, you know, 4 or 5%, which to an agency as small as us and a budget as small as ours, that's a big impact. So we have had audits, we have had our postings, you know, checked by the accounting team. There's no errors. Our costs are our costs. The problem really is that the formula that the Joint Legislative Budget Committee uses to calculate the ERE is flawed. It's a shortfall. They calculate 45% of payroll costs, and our actual costs for ERE are 49%. And so I have had exhaustive conversations with OSPB and JLBC about this issue, and the best advice I have been provided is to submit a budget request and you know, indicate what sacrifices that the agency has to make in the process to close this gap. In my perfect world, they would look at actual costs and the calculation would be applied year to year, but they don't. They just estimate 45% for all agencies. It happens to be that, and you know, again, we're a small agency, but our staff, what our elections represent, is more costly. These are benefits that we, to which, you know, everyone that works for this agency is entitled. So, you know, there's no, I am not, I would never suggest that, you know, benefits should be, you know, reduced, but I want this shortfall remedied, and this is my strategy. So, questions about that?
This time.
Thank you. Moving on then to number three, there are two employees of this agency whose salaries are below the midpoint of their salary bands. So this is an effort to bring the two employees to the midpoint of their respective salary bands. We have been carefully benchmarking for the other employees. We know that their salaries, that their wages are above the midpoint. Obviously, we would love to have, I think, you know, all of us at a certain level, you know, within the salary band that better ensures, you know, that that excellence is rewarded, you know, that better ensures retention of employees and so forth. So this is one step in the process to try to address what is, you know, a discrepancy, if you will, in terms of, you know, where these employees fall in that particular area. Any questions about that?
Ms. Pattinon, I was just wondering, you know, that you're also taking years of service into account, I'm assuming.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, so, exactly.
So somebody who's brand new, maybe may not be at midpoint, but as we...
Yes, definitely. And thank you for that question, Dr. Malott. So the state of Arizona does encourage, you know, in many cases, you know, hiring at the entrance of the minimum of the salary band. But agencies have the discretion to, you know, funds are available and a justification exists to hire and to adjust salaries anywhere within the band based on those factors and others. So, yes.
Okay.
Any thoughts, questions, or comments there? Okay, then moving on to the last one. This is one that I was actually quite surprised was rejected last year, which may be a new administration sort of, you know, that changeover. We may have, that may have played a role in this, but last year I submitted a very similar request, you know, to have additional spending authority when we need it for specific kinds of investigations where forensic psychology standard of care is concerned. Jennifer and I, we always discuss, you know, with cases, what our investigative strategy consists of and needs to consist of. And there are instances where, you know, we do believe that this type of an expert evaluation of a case would really inform the board significantly. So we just don't have a adequate source to draw upon if we were to receive, you know, five complaints of this kind in any particular fiscal year. We sort of have to, we have to triage sometimes. We sort of have to wait and see, you know, what the CSC determines, whether the cases go forward. But if the board were to have, you know, three, five, six cases in any particular year, and you want, you know, an expert opinion, we wouldn't have the funds to effectively do that. So this is requesting that we have those funds available. We may or may not use them, in which case the funds would simply not be spent and would revert back to the agency fund. But we feel that it, for, from consistency purposes and to fully inform the board in this complex area of practice, that just having the assurance that we can tap into this spending authority, that would be advantageous. Any questions or observations about that? Yes, Dr. Stewart.
Heidi, you folks have done so much with so little for so long. You're now experts in doing anything with nothing. And I think it's long overdue. And what can we do as a board to support you in this effort, your effort to with increase in funding?
Thank you, Dr. Stewart. I mean, I really do think that when I submit these funding requests, that a reflection that, you know, the board reviewed everyone and, you know, reviewed this information from both a public protection perspective and a fiscal perspective and a data-driven perspective, and that you support with a motion that all of these initiatives or any one of these initiatives, whatever your vote reflects, I think that's the best that I can ask for from the board in terms of support today.
Okay. So we're not engaging in a letter writing campaign. maybe that's who Mr. Diner is going to see shortly, is he's going to go shake hands with people. Mr. Diner, put in a good word for the board, right? Yeah. All right. Ms. Packenham, was that, I think that brought us.
Yes. Unless there's any other, you know, questions, something that's confusing or something that you want more insight into, I'll let the board deliberate.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have a lot to deliberate other than, you know, I have, I am the eternal optimist that this will be taken with the seriousness of which we present this, given given situations we're presented with, given the increased need for investigative power, given the need to retain quality staff and to be able to grow and develop them going forward. And so I, for one, you know, with the exception of thinking through the, do we want to talk about one FTE on the investigator versus, you know, 0.5, I, for one, would make the motion that this, that we accept the appropriation increase request for fiscal year 2025.
Second.
So there's first, second, I think the discussion is around that 0.5 FTE is my question. Like, it's 2025, like 2 years out. Like, you're essentially, I mean, if you look at where we're at today, we could use that 0.5. Do you see any harm in us trying to go for the one? Like, do we have the data to back up a full FTE there?
Mr. Chair, I reflect upon this, I do think that I can frame the request in such a way that so priority one includes two options that we would, our first request or our preferred request, however I end up describing it ultimately, would be one FTE. And so, you know, all those values would be adjusted except for those, you know, one kind time cost of equipment and training and so forth. You know, if it is the determination of the executive and the legislature that we are to begin at least in the initial fiscal year with a part-time FTE, then, you know, we would accept that as a compromise or an interim or a stepped, you know, sort of solution. So I'm very comfortable with that.
Other discussion around that matter?
Yes.
Yes, Dr. Malott.
So Heidi, we're still a 90-10 board, right?
Yes. And so thank you for asking that question, Dr. Malott. And Mr. Chair, just in case that's not everyone understands that term. So all of the fees that we collect, all the revenue that we collect, we retain 90% and then we contribute 10% to the general fund. That's been true for all of history. And I don't see that ever changing. So we receive $0 from the state general fund. We are entirely fee driven. And in fact, we don't even retain spending authority over all of our fees.
So your budget that you're submitting then is below the 90 so-called funds that have been. So your request then is well within the parameters. So even though it's a 90-10 board and all of the money that we're requesting in fees, we still have to request that 90%, the 90. And then at the end of the year, Ms. Pakkinen, if some money doesn't get spent, does it go back to the general fund or do we get to retain it?
So, Mr. Chair, I think I heard the first question, which was that we have to request permission. So what we're requesting in terms of permission is permission to spend the money that we've collected. So yes, we may collect $1 million in a year and the legislature may say you only get to spend $300,000. So it's all in the, you know, the need, the justification, you know, all of those kinds of considerations. And yes, so by way of example, what I'm looking at in terms of the end of the fiscal year report that I received very recently, we spent all but 18,000 of our appropriation, some of which gets to roll over to next year, but that sort of complicates the conversation. So let's say we underspent by $8,000, that reverts into the fund, you know, and it's untouchable because we didn't spend it. I should say this, I think this is important information. My revenue projections for fiscal year 2024, the year that we are 1 month into, I am projecting about $921,000 in revenue. Of that, so $662,500 in the psychology fund. We're spending well less than that, considerably less than that. I am projecting, and I'm afraid this is super conservative because of the just astronomical growth in the behavior analyst revenue. I am projecting that we are going to collect about $361,000 in this fiscal year. We're spending not even $100,000. So our funds continue to grow. And that's another issue. That's a future issue that I think that we need to talk about. I think that if we continue to see this happen, we need to have the conversation about fee reductions. I'm not quite ready to do that yet because I think we're in a period of unprecedented growth. So I think it would be a little early to start talking about, you know, an analysis of the appropriateness of our fees. But when we see this sustained situation of we collect fees, we spend only a tiny fraction of it, we have needs, address our needs. And then once we're able to get stable, if such a thing exists, then is our fund projected to continue growing? We shouldn't be functioning as a bank.
I vote for Heidi for president.
Heidi for, yeah. Heidi for president of the board. So.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you for that. Other questions or comments, Dr. Stewart?
Thank you, Chair. We are a growing concern. If we look at it on a business model, we're growing in terms of the number of members, and we're not requesting that much additional in terms of permission to spend. So I agree with Mr. Dinar. We need to go for the one FTE and anything else that you can think of to get us through, because with this rate of growth, we're not going to be able to keep up with all the applicants, and then the subsequent complaints against the members, a year or 2 years from now, unless we have that infusion that comes from permission to spend. Thank you.
Yeah. Other comments before we, vote on the motion, which was to accept this and to increase with the suggestion that Ms. Pakkinen that she framed the request for the part-time FTE into a full FTE. All right. I had a first. I forget who my second was, but I'm just going to default to Dr.
Stewart.
Yep, exactly. Default to Dr. Stewart. I think we just had our discussion. Any further discussion? If not, I'm going to call the question. And all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstaining? Let the record show that this this vote passed unanimously by the full board, and that we are excited for Ms. Pakanen to take this forward.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And I believe that brings us to the conclusion of the program. And that, well, yes, because there is no 19, there is no 19, there's only 20.
There's no 19?
I have 19 of new agenda items.
Oh, yeah, sorry, it's at the very bottom. My eyes are bleeding, so I missed it. Do we have a do we have any new board business that we'd like to see on the agenda going forward? I have one.
Yeah, I have one. Ms. Pakanen, could we get an update on where we are? We have two more vacancies, right? And mine, so that's three. And obviously the governor's office did appoint Dr. Anita's name. I can't see it on my screen.
Anna.
Yep.
Yeah, so do you know, I mean, I don't know if it's agendized, so you can't talk about it, but I'd like to get an update. That's, you know, obviously a very vested interest in that.
Okay. Yes, I am. I'm hopeful that by the next board agenda, there will be some considerable movement in, you know, a specific direction. But I'm not speaking to something that's not on the agenda, of course.
Yeah.
Okay. The item I would like to see addressed is that as we reach out to the parties that were indicated by the Committee on Behavior Analysts with regard to the agency's actions, that that information be shared back with the full board as well as the committee.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And then I believe, Ms. Pakanen, do we need to also think about agendizing the information that we received from Alicia Jeremiah with regard to the human resources tools that we were corresponding about in mid-July?
Yes, Mr. Chair. From my perspective, so the executive director performance appraisal is what you were referring to. Obviously, we knew this agenda would not accommodate that matter. We'll assess whether September 1 can. If not, October, we'll look at that agenda. From my perspective, I don't see, you know, that it's really super time sensitive and critical, but it's definitely on my list to try to squeeze onto an agenda whenever we can achieve that.
I have one more item that I'd like to add. I just got my renewal application. Of course, it went straight to junk, and it starts with a no reply, which is kind of and I really feel we need an alternative solution to that, you know, because all three reminders, if they go straight, and I have my junk setting set at the lowest level. So it really is concerning, which people might miss. So I'd like to put that on the agenda to see if, you know, I was thinking at least a postcard or something.
Maybe we've got money to use some old snail mail and send a postcard out. I just got a postcard from the state of Michigan, actually. They still use snail mail. But yeah, so we'll go ahead and agendize that for other ways to communicate.
Thank you.
SMS messages. Okay, any other items? That was exciting. All right. With all that, then next item is number 20, motion for adjournment.
So moved.
I'll second it.
Very good. I'm guessing there's no further discussion. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstaining? Motion carries. Thank you, everyone. I know this was a big lift today. Thank you to board staff. Also, you know, a big lift. Appreciate everybody's willingness to help us choreograph, Dr. Malott and Dr. Stewart. And just thank you again, and see you all at the next meeting.
Thank you, Dr.
Thank you.